gentleman by the name of James Collier appears now on the Stan and Haney show. James believes that the whole moon landings, Apollos 11 through 16, were hoaxes, and they did not happen. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
First of all, I don't know how long I can tolerate you being on the air with us when you're saying the moon landings didn't occur, when I know for a fact that in 1969, July of 1969, I was in my parents' bedroom watching on a black and white TV as the first ghostly pictures from the moon came into our homes. You say it didn't happen. Why?
I'll give you a quick reading of some things, and I'll stay out of the technical stuff.
But please
how much time do we have?
You got about a few minutes here. Go ahead. Yeah, I'll give
you a few minutes. The getting through the Van Allen radiation belt around the Earth, there's a belt of radiation that you can't get through. It'll kill you, according to James Van Allen's report. They named it after him. When they got to the moon, they never took a camera and put it on the astronaut and tilted it up and said, there's the Earth. They had six landings. And then, because I asked NASA, I said, prove you went there.
Uh-huh.
I'm just an investigative reporter. I didn't start this out of the blue.
I understand, sure.
And I said, prove you went there. And I said, why didn't you at least take a picture of the Earth? Well, they didn't have an answer. There's no stars in any NASA photos at all. And that would have oriented the astronomers, and they'd have said, oh, yeah, you were on the moon. And there's no atmosphere on the moon, so that would have been easy to take pictures of stars. The NASA photography is demonstrably faked. There's no one who can see that without saying, yeah, that's a fraud. So why did they do it? Like the shadow of the lunar lander, when it lands on the surface of the moon, You can see that its shadow is exactly its own length. Like, it's 33 feet tall, and the shadow is 33 feet long. And then the astronauts step out into the sunlight, and they're 6 feet tall, but their shadows are 18 feet long, three times their length. And so that's two light sources, which is impossible.
Okay, assuming that the moon landing was faked, why Apollo 13? Were they just knowing that it would make a good movie 20 years later?
Now, I show, and it's so clear in the tape that I've taken NASA footage to show to everybody here. And you see that in the LEM, I went to Houston and to Washington, and I videotaped the inside of real LEMs.
Yes.
And the hatch door is flush to the ceiling in a real LEM. And there's 3 feet between that and the top of the engine that mount. Now, in the Apollo official, we were really there. Jim Lovell takes a dive through a 12-inch cone that comes down from the ceiling. And then there's the hatch door. And then he dives down another 6 feet. All of that is totally impossible, and it wasn't a real LEM. You can see it. And NASA has not denied that. And I've dealt with Dr. John Lawrence, who's the head man there, who's the spokesman. And nobody is denying anything in that tape.
And so what? Did NASA just need some bad PR at that time, and
so they
decided to do that?
Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Then what do you say for people like Gus Grissom, Chaffee, Ed White?
And they're living on an island with Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix.
Who sat on top of an Apollo Saturn V rocket and lost their lives for what?
Now,
for the ultimate hoax to say that man landed on the moon?
I have not investigated that, but I'll tell you what the facts of that is as far as I know.
I'll tell you right now, I have in-laws and family members that work at the Cape that were there at that time, saw the bodies, saw the burned wreckage, and know that people lost their lives for some kind of theatrical thing.
Did you ask them why Gus Grissom, who hung a lemon on it that morning, why that hatch door opened inward for the one and only time?
Well,
so
that was obviously the first design of the rocket.
No, before that, it had opened outward. That door was changed for that mission, sir. Check that out. And you're going to question whether that wasn't murder. No, I didn't say it is. People who have questioned why they reversed that door, pumped 100% oxygen in there that day. This is documented. And then supposedly had a loose wire on the dashboard.
Well, sir, I will also let you know that during the Mercury and Gemini projects, that there was also 100% oxygen put into those space flights,
right,
and they were still going with the same type of system for the Apollo project.
But all doors opened outward until that particular one.
And although you're not coming right out and saying it, Mr. Collier, I want to be very clear as to what you are saying. Are you hinting around that the government, NASA in particular, may be responsible for a murder? of three astronauts?
I'm only giving facts. You make your own conclusions, and your anger in all this is...
I'm not angry. I'm not angry at all. I'm just trying to go and get some answers because...
I am, too. That's all I'm doing. I'm just an investigator.
Okay, but what were we watching when we went to the causeways and stuff around Cape Canaveral, Cape Kennedy? What are we seeing? We seeing just something that maybe goes into a suborbital flight and comes back down?
Yeah, it goes into below... well, anything that goes out there without a man in it can go wherever it wants to go.
So you are saying that, and I want to make this perfectly understandable, you are saying that the Apollo rockets that we all watched and go up as a kid, people, when I did, an adult and people that worked at the Kennedy Space Center, that there was nobody on those rockets.
Well, they might have been in the rockets, but they didn't go to outer space. They went to inner space.
Hopefully within the next week or so have Buzz Aldrin on this show,
right.
And I would like to hear what his reply to you is. I would even love to have the two of you on together at the same time.
Would you do that and give us at least an hour or two?
I can't give you an hour or two. I can give you a half hour, Max.
A half an hour with Buzz Aldrin would be absolutely great.
All right, James. Collier, who believes nobody landed on the moon. Bye-bye. What a... come on. K-Rock, hello, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Todd Palmer calling you guys.
Yeah.
Hey, now, my second cousin went to the moon in 1972 on the Apollo 17 mission.
What's your cousin's name?
Jack Harrison Schmidt.
Oh, yeah.
He was the only geologist that ever went to the moon.
Now, according to this guy, it never happened.
Well, I was there for the launch, and I was 12 years old, and I remember everything, and I got the VIP passes to prove it.
Now, isn't Mr. Schmidt dead now?
No, he's still alive.
Can you get a hold of him for us?
You know, he's a senator from New Mexico, and
that's right. Okay.
He's kind of a tough man to get a hold of because I'm just a little guy in the family. But we did have a big powwow. See, my family is from Germany, and they're from New Mexico, White Sands area.
Yes.
And that's where Schmidt family's from. See, there a lot of the Schmidts were Aztec and Mamaya people. That's where my grandmother is from. And she's passed on now. But we had a big meeting that after a family gathering so he could explain to us what he saw on the moon.
And so you believe he went to the moon?
Well, I know he did. I was standing there. I was closer than... This was right before President Nixon was impeached, okay? I was closer than he was to the launch pad. And we went and watched him get into the vehicle itself where they pull him out from the...
Right.
Okay, well, anyhow, we watched all that. We got the VIP tour, and my grandmother's sister's boy. And I'm telling you, we watched the whole lot. So this guy, whoever this guy he's full of it.
Yep.
Did you get any moon rocks?
No, they didn't bring no moon rocks back. You know, they brought those back. Those are all classified.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you what, they did have a lot of pictures that you all never seen, because when he came home, we had a slideshow, and it was unreal.
You know, to this day, you can't get moon rocks and stuff that they show you.
You can buy them, but they cost big bucks.
I was told that even the ones that they claim you can buy aren't really them, that they are direct copies or molds of the moon rock, but the actual moon rocks still stay classified and out of the public sight.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't know because we, like I said, my sister Terry and I, you know, we went and watched the moon, watched them launch to the moon. It was in January. It was at nighttime. You can't miss a nighttime launch. It was so loud you couldn't hear yourself whistle, scream, or holler. It just shook you all around. It went 5 million horsepower pushing that buggy up to the moon. You're telling me that guy is, he's full of it because...
Of course he is.
So what did he tell you about the moon?
The moon was like a big ocean bed. Like if you took the water out of the ocean and the moon itself, the surface that they walked on, and remember when you seen the pictures of them driving the buggy?
Yeah.
Well, when you seen them jumping up in the air with that buggy, that was my cousin. That was Jack Harrison Schmidt. But anyhow, he said it was like walking in the ocean that was no more water. It was like, and the bottom had dried up and been sifted, so you were like walking in sediment. He said it was just like walking like that, like you were walking in the bottom of the ocean.
All right, pal. Hey, thanks.
I've been ringing you guys to bug you, I got so excited about this because this jerk, you tell that guy, too. If he ever wants to talk to somebody that's seen it all, I'll get him, and I'll give him damn the whole family number. He can call him up. But I sure as heck watched the launch, and I believe that they all been to the moon and back a bunch of times.
All right, man.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm Steve Downs. Some of you may know me as the voice of Halo's Master Chief. In 1997, Bill Clinton was president of the United States.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Princess Diana was laid to rest.
Bye.
and the Florida Marlins won the World Series.
And the Florida Marlins are world champions.
That was also the year Stan and Haney began doing afternoons on 96 K-Rock. They said it would never last. Some even plotted to make sure it would never last. But for some ungodly reason, they're still here. Stan and Haney, whether you like it or not. Afternoons on 96 K-Rock.
Heat, but I'm loving all the people that I get to meet. You got to tune your radio on. Now listen to me. We got that powerful stuff that'll knock you off your feet. Stan and Haney. Stan and Haney. Stan and Haney on all afternoon. Now from Naples to Fort Myers, Southwest Florida, you know it can't be wrong. From Marco to Port Charlotte, they all heard the news. They say 2 o'clock, time to light the fuse. Stan and Haney. Stan and Haney. Stan and Haney all afternoon. The best in local radio that there's ever been. Show it so damn good it makes the Pope wanna sin. The bell out to the beaches, people laugh out loud. Got the show that draws flies and a bit of a crowd. Stand and hit it. Stand and hit it. Stand and hit it all afternoon. We like whiskey and liquor, hot paradise. Listen to us once, then you're gonna listen twice. Got up way too damn early for too damn long. Back in the afternoon.
Of whatever is going on in their heads. Stan and Haney, 96 K-Rock.
Hey, everybody. Stan and Haney. Thursday edition of the Stan and Haney Show. Thank you for joining us. Big show today. I'll go over that in just a second or two, but... You know what? It really... That clip that we played to open the show about claiming not to have landed on the moon. I take it as a complete insult because we're of the age, we're at that age where when we were kids, we saw it. And Haney and I have been privileged to speak to several men that walked on the moon. Buzz Aldrin, second man to walk on the moon, actually became a friend of the show's back in the late 90s and early 2000s. We had him on several times. We had Alan Bean, who was on Apollo 12. Our buddy Jim Lovell, multiple times on the show. Apollo 13. Look, these guys risked their lives in tin cans, thrown out into space with nothing more than a protractor and a slide rule and a bunch of great brains. And with all of our computer power today, they can't figure out how to do it again. We know, and as you heard in the interview, we both, Haney and I, have had family members working at the Cape to launch these things, build these things. Take a look. Go to the Kennedy Space Center and take a look at their vehicle assembly building where they roll out, well, all the way up to the shuttles and stuff while they were still going, rolling them out to the launch pad and watch these things go up. I actually broadcast two space shuttles, and everybody at the Cape would always tell you, oh, nothing. It was nothing like when the Saturn V went up. The moonshots shook the whole place. People that say, oh, well, you can't see the stars. Anybody that's done photography certainly knows that you have an aperture setting as to how much light you get in. Got to let in as much light as possible. You're not going to see the stars. Oh, well, you never saw a picture of the Earth. You never saw a picture of it. Well, they made a bum mistake. Apollo 12 went and accidentally turned the camera towards the sun, burned it out. Couldn't take any more pictures from the moon. Don't give me that, these clowns saying, oh, they didn't go to the moon.
Well, and they a lot of that they say because we didn't go back.
They don't know how to do it now.
Well, and what do they expect? We can't come right out and talk about the things that were found on the moon.
Oh, you know what? And I'll tell you something that and Haney jokes about it, but it's true. They found out, and this was, if you like, watch the Smithsonian Channel or that. They have the suits that the astronauts walked on the moon with in their archives under a climate-controlled lock and key. And every once in a while, every 10 years or so, they'll go and analyze them. And they found out, and we don't know how to fix it, they found out that the moon dust is such a fine particle that it was actually making its way through the mm-hmm. spacesuits that had they stayed there longer, they would eventually have made their way through the boot, the rubber boots, the fiber that was in their pressure suits. And that stuff is so fine, it would cut right through.
Yeah, and then when it gets through, what would it do to your skin?
Yeah. So, you know what, it don't. Remember the one footage, I don't know if it was that guy, when Buzz Aldrin clocked him?
Yeah.
Punched him right in the mouth when he said, you didn't land on the moon. Oh, really? How about this knuckle sandwich?
And that knuckle sandwich, a lot of people looked at that as, isn't that funny? Look at the old man going off on that guy. When you say that to somebody that was part of that, look at where they're coming from. When Buzz Aldrin punched that guy, He was thinking about the guys that died on the launching pad.
Yes, sir.
All of the sacrifices that were made to make that happen, only to have some jackball go, oh, it never happened.
Unbelievable.
And you're right in what you were saying earlier. People think about astronauts and mistakenly, they think about them like Chuck Yeager.
That jackball.
Chuck Yeager is a jackball. All he was reckless. He did not have the right stuff.
Nope.
And the right stuff isn't just about courage. These people that were up there as astronauts, we think of them as gung-ho American heroes, and they are. But at the same time, these guys, as you said, protractors and whatnot, not only the guys on the ground, but the guys in those tin cans, most of them had doctor before their name.
Yep.
And that doctorate was in physics.
Our buddy Jim Lovell used to be able to, we talk about Mike Chiannopoulos being able to navigate with the stars on his boat. Jim Lovell, that was his job to do that in outer space. Make sure they got to the moon. Unbelievable.
It's just that people don't give it enough thought. They don't think about putting themselves in that position of not just being far away from home, but being that far away from breathable air.
Yep.
And being in a confined space with other people just right up on top of you, keeping your cool through these emergencies and,
about the size, sitting up there for 6 days in a thing about the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. Trapped, that's it.
That might be more room.
Might be.
Chevy Vega?
It may be Vega, Pinto. we're gonna take a break. Coming up on the show today, in the next hour, Steve DeShavi from the Dead Files, he's going to be joining us. Wanted to talk to this guy. I'm a big fan of his show, and he's going to be coming in studio, hanging out with us this afternoon. Seems like a great guy.
You think he'll play along?
What? I'm going to ask him straight up. What's going on?
No, when we do all our cop humor. Like, you a cop?
I think he'll get what we're doing. Because he...
The old cannon gag.
21 years of homicide detective.
Yeah,
New York
so
City
if he
Police
did that, of course he had to watch Cannon and stuff like that as part of his training.
And then Cannon, he was a PI, which Steve is. You know, they people get suspicious when they see a guy walking around in a suit carrying a briefcase.
So a guy like that, with 21 years, he had to have watched every episode of Mannix and the Rockford Files. Uh-huh. And
they ask you straight up, you a cop? And then you pause and look him straight in the eye. Tell him, private. Mm. And then they're a little bit more at ease.
Backs him off a little
bit. Yeah, it does. And you always carry a little snub-nosed 38 with you.
Why?
Because it's very inaccurate, and so when you go running around after criminals, firing it in the air, it
makes a loud noise.
Yeah, the best you're going to get is hit in the shoulder.
Yeah. So it's more for the effect.
Yeah, it is.
Makes a nice big bang.
Look, I just watched one season of Mannix. The guy got hit in the head with the butt of a 38 snub nose about 15 times. And must have taken at least 20 shots to the shoulder. In those episodes. He's fine. He was ready for the next case.
Yeah. Come to think of it, on Chips, the motor cops didn't even carry guns, did they?
I don't think so.
Matter of fact, I don't think I ever saw any of them with guns. Except for Randy Oakes. I think she had a gun one time.
Well, she's a girl. We'll be back. Stan and Haney, Steve DeShavi on the show today in just a little bit. Also a chance for a thou, and we'll have our question of the week. We're Stan and Haney, 96K Rock.
Remember years ago when we told you about that woman who made her own shrimp standing over a bucket? Well, it's all true. Stan and Haney on 96K Rock.
Hey, everybody. Stan and Haney, thank you for joining us today. Thursday afternoon. Grab bag here in just a second. Steve DeShavi from Dead Files joining us for the 3 o'clock hour.
4 o'clock safe word could get you a thou. Question of the week later on today.
I am unused to feeling so ignorant because you, I cannot keep up with you and your programs.
I know. You know, my 600-pound life.
You've really been applying yourself.
And then I got this Dead Files. Well, I've been a fan of the Dead Files for longer. I came across my 600-pound life because of the girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently at work, all the gals over at the office, they all love the 600-pound life. But here's how I found out about the Dead Files was Travel Channel. And the show that's on before it is Zach Bagans' Ghost Adventures. He was the one where I visited his museum when I went to Vegas. And when the DVR would be recording Ghost Adventures, it would bleed over into this next show called The Dead Files. And I'm like...
And you'd start watching it until it got cut off and you go, oh, damn it.
Yeah. And I said, wait a second.
Why am I not watching this?
And I started to DVR it. And it's good. It's good because even if you're skeptical, and I'm one of them, you're one of them, come on. You have this Amy Allen who goes off on her own, does her thing where she's seeing dead people and telling you what happened in the house. But then you got Steve DeShavi, 21 years retired homicide detective, New York City, a guy that has seen it all. And he goes completely separate from her and goes at it like a crime investigation. Like he's going to interview the nutballs in the house.
And then they meet up at the end and everybody laughs. And it's all brought together.
They don't laugh.
See, I just picture everything like Chips, where they have that freeze frame and everybody laughing
I'll tell you, they because
you need the levity at the end.
They meet at the end for the first time and they compare what they found. Like Amy will say, oh, well, there was a man in a military uniform. I believe it was a Confederate uniform. And then, of course, Steve DeShavi, doing his police work, said, hold on a second. In 1863, a Confederate colonel lived here and wiped out his entire family. And then she has a sketch drawn of who she sees. And then Steve DeShavi usually has a picture of the Confederate colonel, mm-hmm. and they'll put them together eerily similar.
Does it look more like you or more like Dave? Because all sketches look like one of the two of you.
Those are criminal sketches after a holdup at a 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Dave.
Dave, the Confederate general?
Yeah, but he will go and do the legwork to find out if anything that she's saying...
The stuff that's based in reality.
Yeah, and then at the end, they always have, after they leave, what happens. And usually, they'll have the notes, the Johnson family are still looking to have the house have an exorcism performed on it. The activity continues.
Well, if he can find stuff on the historical record,
yeah,
couldn't she find the same stuff?
That's not what she does. That's not what she's.
That's not her department.
This is why Steve's coming in. He's a man of reason. She's a little flighty. She's out there.
Well, we'll see. You know, maybe we can solve something. You know, I'm psychic.
You are psychic, but do you see dead people?
No. I just see people. I don't think anybody's really dead.
No. What are they?
Oh, they're in heaven or they're in hell.
Yep.
Purgatory's made up.
So they're not living in the ether. They just got to go somewhere. What happens if the door's locked?
Then you call a locksmith or you kick it down.
Let's do the grab bag.
I'm not sure why you would be asking me about locksmithing
in
the middle of a psychic discussion.
In a second. That's true.
Locksmithery.
Yeah. I'm talking psychics and suddenly, you got Houdini picking a lock.
Yep.
Last time I checked, I'm not Houdini.
Stan, to put it as simply as I can, and I've done it before, but we judge what is real based on our senses.
Yeah.
And we know through technology that there are things out there that we would never know about if we didn't have the right equipment to observe it, like ultraviolet light.
Right.
That's very real.
Right.
But if you tried to convince somebody, they'd go, yeah, I haven't seen it. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing with different dimensions. Things could be going on all around us, but we just don't know
it. And then maybe there's somebody like her, that Amy, that's a sensitive to that. I don't know. If anybody will give us the straight line on her, it's Steve DeShavi. Because he's no holds barred guy. He don't clown around.
Yeah, but doesn't he have a financial interest in, you know?
Well, I don't know. What the hell could it be paying him? He lives here in Southwest Florida.
Well, I mean, there'd be no show if it became obvious that he's, you know, doing cold reads on people. And
she doesn't do reads. There's nobody there when she does it.
So, what, she got an Ancestry account?
I don't know. Because this bald-headed guy that goes around, I don't know what his deal is. He goes around filming, and he hides everything in the house so that she doesn't get any visual clue as to, you know, if these people are religious, if these people have how many children. Because it's not until Steve DeShavi, 21 years, New York City.
Delivers the goods
and tells her. And you know what? A couple of things. He goes and he hears her time. Doesn't ring a bell with him. But then when she hits on something, he gives you that cop look. What?
So, if it doesn't hit right away, she just keeps talking until she hits on something.
I don't know. We got to find out.
All right. It would have been helpful if I watched the show.
It would have been. Oh, I'm a huge fan.
Maybe D-Train can find, like, a trailer or something.
Oh, yeah, he can find a trailer. Promo. Oh, there's plenty of trailers. There's a trailer. If you can find one, D-Train, we'll pipe up a trailer.
Yeah, it'd fit right into the grab bag.
Yeah. Mother's Day this weekend. She's your real superhero.
Here's to you, Mom. While the movie screens of America are awash with fictional superheroes, there's not a son or a daughter among us who doesn't know deep down who the real superheroes are. They're you. 150-ish pounds, give or take a little water weight, of straight-up guilt-inducing moral authority that stands ready to kick our undisciplined butts. Every day you show us your mettle by performing feats of strength and courage that would make most mere mortals surrender in whimpering defeat. Like packing lunches for the 1,200th time, treating grass stains on softball uniforms smelly enough to steal second all by themselves. Or in the gutsiest display of mom-style bravado yet, climbing into bed every night with, you guessed it, Dad. Yep. The same hopeless romantic who just ate a pre-bedtime snack of week-old pepperoni pizza. So with Mother's Day on the way, America, forget about the superheroes who wear capes or spin webs. Spend a little time heaping praise on the one wearing a grape juice-stained threadbare housecoat. Mother's Day is her day, baby. So make it count, or face you-know-who's wrath.
We got a clip there for Haney. As I already know this show, but we set roll 'em. Here you go, Haney.
It's really bad in here.
My name is Amy Allen. There's a lot of freaking dead people here. I see dead people. They're all messed up looking. I speak to dead people.
What's going on?
I'm experiencing 20 to 30 deaths. He's angry, very, very angry. And they speak to me. Get the f*** out. Get out of here. Get out of here. There was blood all over. But there's only one way to know if my findings are real.
I think she broke her neck.
I rely on my partner.
I'm Steve DeShavi.
I'm in downtown Seattle, New York City, just outside of Atlantic City.
Northern Indiana.
Fairbanks, Alaska. I hope we can figure out what the hell's going on in this place. I'm a retired New York City homicide detective. Who the hell would do this? And I know every person, every house has secrets.
They bury them underneath the floor.
It's my job to reveal them. Were you surprised when you found them dead?
No.
He said you're hanging an innocent man.
But Steve and I never speak. We get those chills.
Do you feel that whatever's here wants you out?
Absolutely.
We never communicate during an investigation. How many people got killed?
He's going to put a knife in their throat. Until the very end. They're all nasty. It's bad. There were all of these bodies.
When we uncover, if it's safe for you to stay.
I feel like I'm being kicked out of my own home.
I would burn this place to the ground.
For time to get out. He's crazy. I feel him, like, grabbing my face.
She wanted to die.
I couldn't get him out.
Is he dangerous?
There's definitely possession going on. She's always watching me.
The entire family was murdered.
What?
It's kind of freaking me out.
There's violence inflicted on these people.
Are they dangerous?
Yes, they are. Bad things are gonna happen. I think she kills them. They died in a fire.
There was a huge fire here.
They couldn't get out. It was like endless darkness.
Huh?
Oh.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess she had me at endless darkness.
Yup. And you're going to tell me you're not going to believe Steve DeShavi, retired New York City homicide detective?
Well, I guess you gotta.
This is great. A brawl, a nasty brawl, started at a cornhole tournament in Georgia. A couple of guys.
Now, was this recreational or a professional?
It's a professional tournament. And a couple of guys, maybe too many, cold ones, got into a fight. You know, it always happens at a cornhole tournament. And then leave it to some woman to grab the PA mic to tell them to stop it. Cornhole tournament.
Stop it right now! We will stop this tournament! This is stupid! This is absolutely ridiculous! Get out of here! We will stop this tournament right now! We are adults, and this is ridiculous! It is a cornhole tournament fundraiser! Cut the crap!
And, of course, as the experts will tell you, when people are enraged to the point of physical violence, the sound of a shrill, barely stable female voice yep. will calm them down every time.
Cut right through you like a knife. Jeez.
Certainly wouldn't escalate yeah. things.
You know how they do with lab animals and hit that certain tone,
mm-hmm.
and then they suddenly go crazy?
Yep.
All right, follow me on this. Because here we go. More trouble being stirred up. A white student called campus police on a black grad student at Yale because she was sleeping in the dorm's common room, not in her room. So the black student decided she was going to film her interaction with the cops when they came and said, "Ma'am, what are you doing sleeping here in the common room? Are you, in fact, a student? Can we see who you are?" And then it went from there.
Stan, I'll have you know, I've done a full investigation of this. Let's see what you have.
I need to go back to the 12th floor to finish writing my paper.
You got your ID on you?
Yeah, I do.
All right, can we see that?
Why?
We got a police call for you.
That you belong here. Okay, let me open my apartment for you so that you can see that I belong here. I don't think there's a need for you to be here. I think you probably need to commit her to an institution. That's the only, like, use you have for being here.
Once we verify that you're a resident here, then we'll be on our way.
Okay, great. I need to get back to the 12th floor. I gotta write my paper.
Can we just have your ID, ma'am?
Why?
I just explained to you. We have a police call for you.
You just said that if you prove that I live here,
correct.
You would leave.
Yep. So
okay, I just opened... I just opened the door to my apartment.
That's fine. I can see that.
Okay. Thank you for watching that. Why?
So we can verify who you are, and we'll get out of your hair. How's that?
I'm going to think about whether I want to show that to you or not, because I really don't know if there's a justification for you even actually being in the building. I was sleeping in the common room, and she comes in and turns the lights on.
Sure.
And she's like, "Why are you sleeping here? You're not supposed to be sleeping there.
Or...
I'm going to call the police on you."
Hmm. I guess she did belong there. But they weren't rude to her.
No, they weren't. They bent over backwards because, I guess, initially a male cop responded, then a female cop was there very quickly, and then when she started saying she was being harassed, their black male supervisor had to show up. And if you pay attention to what is going on there, she's getting attention because this is a racial thing, But with her own words, she thinks the woman that called the police may have a screw loose.
Yep.
And eventually it comes out, oh, yeah, she's crazy. She thinks that the common area is part of her apartment. She doesn't understand things. So she tries to turn it into a racial thing when evidently, according to her, it's a mental health thing. And just those poor cops, they're trying to be as respectful as they can to her. She's not returning it. And the reason that it took so long is because Yale had her name misspelled in the record.
There you go.
So it's not the cop's fault.
No.
They have to answer the call, figure out what's going on. She shows them an ID, which they phone in, and there's nobody by that name.
Police body cam video came out last week where the mayor of Denver's son got into it with cops at a traffic stop.
Did they know who he is?
No, but he made sure to let them know who he was. The kid got a ticket for going 65 in a 40-mile-per-hour zone and started abusing the officer. He even used a gay slur, threatened to have the guy fired. Here's what happened, and then the mayor of Denver had a response.
My dad's the mayor, you
Mayor of what?
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry about it.
You're the mayor, bud.
Yeah,
mayor
exactly.
Of Aurora.
Guess what? I'm about to fire you, Yeah, for what? Yeah, exactly. Don't worry about it.
Hey,
what?
Being food, whatever.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, whatever.
I see your dad. And I got fried.
We didn't hear much more from the son after that. But the mayor of Denver spoke.
Well, the last thing we wanted, young men interacting with our police officers in that manner, particularly African-American young men. And so he recognizes that, and he certainly understands that the officer didn't deserve the interaction that he had. And so he's written an apology to the officer, and he said he hopes that one day he'll get a chance to personally apologize to him.
Wonder who made him write that letter of apology.
Made him. I'm sure it just occurred to him that he was in the wrong. Yeah. I'm sure he has nothing but respect for law enforcement.
Yeah. I gotta play this for you. Woody Harrelson, longtime advocate of the use of marijuana, but he quit. He stopped for like 2 years. He didn't want to do it anymore. But there was one man who got him back using it again. And Woody Harrelson tells that story.
I did quit and then ran into this fella named Willie. I quit for, you know, almost 2 years. No smoking, no vaping. Every once in a while you're going to have something edible. I mean, let's not be... I'm not a nun, all right? So, so I'm with Willie, and, you know, he's constantly, he was never comfortable with me quitting. It just bothered him. And he just kept trying to, and then, you know, finally he passes me the pen after I win a big pot. We're playing poker, and I'm in a celebratory mood, and he hands me that pen, and I just snatch it. I go, oh, f*** it. I realize I'm not supposed to say. Anyway, I take a big draw off of it, and he says, "Welcome home, son."
Well, what world do what world do they live in where you're playing poker with Willie Nelson?
I know. I'd like to play poker with Willie Nelson. Oh, D-Train, I got a few of those from that lady. In case you wanna bank them here, let me shut the music off here. Bank these if you'd like.
Hit the crab.
Here's another one for you.
This is absolutely ridiculous.
I think I got one more here.
This is stupid.
There you go.
You should roll the whole thing without the music.
Oh, he's got the whole thing.
Okay.
We're going to take a break when we
because,
come back.
Because, boy, that just calms, that stops a riot
it
cold,
sure
doesn't it?
It sure does, doesn't it?
That shrieking, shrill voice.
Makes me not want to pick up something and throw it.
Very calming, isn't it?
God. Bernie City Diner bringing us the grab bag today. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We're Stan and Haney, 96 K-Rock.
All women are crazy. Except you, darling. That's right.
just you. Stan and Haney on 96 K-Rock.
Hey, everybody. Stan and Haney. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Thursday afternoon. Coming up, a chance to get a thou. 4 o'clock safe word. Question of the week later on. But I am so pleased, and just talking with this guy, we have a lot of connections. We've kind of like crossed paths so many times in the last couple of years. He is one of the hosts of the Dead Files on the Travel Channel. It's Steve DeShavi. Steve, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
I don't know how we missed him.
I know. He was telling us.
He knows everybody.
Comes by. He knows all of our friends. This is incredible.
Yeah, it's a small world down in Southwest Florida.
It is, and I'm glad you came down and spent a little time with us, because I'm a huge fan of your show.
I appreciate that.
You know, that's the way this town is. When I first moved here and I was talking to people that had lived here forever, I go, well, what's it like down here? And they go, well, it's the world's biggest small town.
No doubt.
It's like everybody knows everybody.
It's Reno in tropical.
Yeah. It is that. And you know what? I just came in here because we were talking that Steve was coming on the show, sitting right there on the Absolute Law text line. Texts already rolling in. Stan is so right. Dead Files is great. another text. The Dead Files is an excellent show. I watch it all the time. Amy Allen can even talk to aliens.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's...
That sounds like a piece of work.
I want to know, how does a...
Bring that mic right up
on you. How does a Marine, a New York homicide detective...
Who has had to deal in reality for your entire life.
Yeah.
Wind up... How did you get on this show?
You know, it's a long story. I'll keep it short because you got a short time here. But ABC News did a documentary on the NYPD. And it was called NYPD 24/7, and they did seven-part series, which I was the featured detective in the first episode that they filmed the Homicide Squad. They filmed us for like 16 months. So it aired. It was 30 million people viewed it.
Were they like around all the time?
24/7. Like when we'd sleep over in our overnight room, because we'd work these weird hours and we get called in for a homicide, they'd be knowing what's going on. They'd live right down the block and they'd come running over and get back out in the car with us.
Right.
So it was 24. So I got used to the camera being around me, obviously. And it aired. It won an Emmy, most watched ABC documentary ever. And the guy that created the Dead Files, Jim Casey, was in... with the one of the networks, I think it was Discovery Channel, who happens to own Travel Channel now, he pitched a show about a private investigator. One of the executives there saw me and said, well, you should check out and see if this guy wants to be on TV, because he'd be really good. So he gives me a phone call, and I think it's a joke. So I hang up. Calls me back, and I'm like, hey, J.O., you know, stop the crap. It's just,
get out of here.
You know, stop. He goes, well, I got your number from the chief of detectives, Steve Terizzi gave it. I'm like, no, I was with Steve on 9/11, so I knew that name wouldn't just pop out of a hat. So I called him back. I said, Steve, did anybody call you from Hollywood to get, yo, bro, I forgot to tell you, they're going to give you a call. I'm like, that was like 6 months ago. When are you going to tell me? So finally, I called him back. I'm like, yeah, I hear you guys are legit. We did a couple of pilots. They hated me. All the networks said I was too New York for them. They were looking for the next Mike Rowe, like the Dirtiest Jobs guy.
Oh, come on. When I hear New York City homicide detective, you fill that role perfectly.
And they said I was too rough around the edges for television.
Please.
But that's exactly what you need.
Well, long story short, Travel Channel, Jim comes up with this paranormal show. And I'm like, I'm not doing, what are you, crazy? I'm not doing a paranormal show. You're out of your mind. I mean, I never didn't believe in a paranormal. I'm a skeptic, but I'm open-minded about
right.
it. And I've used psychics on homicide cases.
Really?
Okay. Oh, yeah, a few times. And, you know, when you need a break on a case, you just do what you got to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was never closed-minded that way. People I don't believe. I didn't say I didn't believe in the paranormal. It's the people I don't believe. So, P.S., fast forward. He calls me about this paranormal show, and I said, all right, I'll give it a shot. I fly out to Denver, meet Amy and about four or five other female psychics that they were trying to audition, basically, for the show. She blew everybody away. I mean,
Let me ask you this in the middle of your story here. Because I watch you guys do this on television. I don't know how much production goes into it, how much editing. Did she blow you away? I mean, did it? Was it shocking for you?
For me,
a skeptic, a guy that's been on the force for a couple of decades, and you see this woman who you haven't met before.
I'm sure you've seen your share of con artists.
Right.
So.
Well, this was the deal. We were working on a double homicide from 1971. That the case we were doing for this, they call it the pilot, they call it a scissor, whatever the hell they call it, right? I asked the lieutenant that was in charge of the case back in 1971 that I happened to get to talk to. Now, we redact everything that could, you know, potentially be part of evidence, so you don't want the public knowing about it.
Right.
So it was impossible for her to get this information, and she came up with four different things that only he knew about, and the detective that had the case who had passed away knew about. So I asked him, I said, did you tell this...
Mm-hmm.
You tell her anything and don't BS me, you know? And he says, no, I don't even know who the hell you're talking about, because they kept her separate from him. And she hit stuff that sent chills up the back of my neck. So I was like, well, and then she did it again when we did the first couple of episodes. And I was like, all right. I mean, basically, I did the first season to try it out, college tuition for my daughter, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the thing, because if you watch some of the, and I don't know, maybe it's my imagination, but I don't think so. If you watch some of the earlier episodes, because I think, what are you guys, in your eighth or ninth season?
We just finished our 10th season. We've been filming since 2010.
Early on, you almost came off as the true skeptic. This was something that you...
Well,
now in the more recent ones, it's like, you know what? I'm not going to be so easily dismissing things.
Well, it's more editing now.
Okay.
I was never as... They edited a lot early on. I mean, stuff that they put in now, like some of the funniest stuff. I mean, like when I say whores, right?
Yes.
The fans get a kick out of that. Yeah. But I must have been saying that for years.
Right.
And they just finally started the last couple of years putting all my
little
Brooklynese.
Isms.
I put.
Because I saw that in the last one.
And the fans jump on top of it, and they don't realize that people don't all talk like me. You know, the rest of the country is just like fascinated by some of the things that come out of my mouth. And what I'm thinking is just regular everyday stuff, right? So,
but you know what? You have those gritty crime shows, and most of them are based out of New York. So when you have a real true to life homicide detective that's on the show, and yeah, he might have a New York accent, be very New York. That's what people, I think, envision in their head for a detective.
Right. I mean, people say, oh, you never smile. I'm like, it's all editing. I do smile. You know that. I'm fun to be around.
He's a likable guy. Come on.
You know, I have fans come up to me. They're like, oh, wow, you actually have teeth. You smile. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. Take it easy.
I want to touch on this. Obviously, we'll talk more about the show because there's so many questions I have. But life as a homicide detective. Haney and I are very close to a lot of law enforcement here in Southwest Florida, state police, the sheriff's departments. And I have a friend of mine who is a detective. And
you're talking about the boy we saved from radio?
Yes. And we personally said, you don't want to do this. Go do something else.
Yeah.
And now he's a detective. But he, and there's various types of detective work that's done within the police force. But they say homicide, you go and you work homicide, you only got to work a couple of years in there and you got to get out because it is so.
I did 13 years.
I mean, what?
Well, cops in general have to see the worst every day, and homicide, you're seeing the worst of the worst.
The worst of the worst.
Well, I always said, if you don't have a sense of humor and some common sense, you'll blow your brains out at the end of the day. You really got to have that sense of humor to back up.
But that's got that homicide is got to be the toughest, and they say you can burn out so quickly doing that.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is? It's like everything else. When you do a job day in, day out, you know, it wasn't just being in homicide. When I worked in uniform, I worked at a precinct that had 119 homicides in one square mile in 1 year. So I was seeing death on a daily basis, whether I was in homicide or not. So just going through the streets, coming up, then going to work in narcotics, and then going to the detective bureau, you know, it becomes just a second nature to you, and you either can deal with it or you can't. You know, either people are cut out for it or they're not, you know? Like, I couldn't be a fireman. I ran into a fire once. They gave me one of those damn blood gas things that look like a crocheting needle.
Yeah.
That was the last time I went into a fire because I had smoke inhalation. I was a young rookie cop in uniform. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to go save a cat, whatever I'm doing, right? And I'm like, never again after that test. I was like, leave that up to the tough guys.
What I hear from a lot of people that have done that kind of work is that you have to make sure that when you're not on the job, whether it's spending time with your family or your friends, just to get out there and remind yourself that not everybody is a cockroach.
Well, absolutely, 100%. I mean, I tell people all the time, I say, life's too short. And everybody that follows me on social media, all they think I do is have fun. Because, you know, I'm either at the cigar bar, out in my backyard, you know, I'm at my backyard fishing, you know, or doing something goofy, you know, because to me, life is just, I've seen too much death in life. So for me, it's just, I try to enjoy it. I mean, stuff aggravates me like everything else, but you know, like snowbirds, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. I call them the other birds, but but they drive me insane. So that's where I get, you know.
Oh, it's crazy.
That's
when
I get homicidal in there.
Yeah, I think we all do. Before I want to continue the conversation,
I'd like to hire him just to ride shotgun to yell at people to cut me off.
Believe me, I've been yelling out the car. I see it played out of state. I'm like, go home.
Do you want to? Now, I know that you got a lot of buddies around. Listen, do you want to say hi to anybody?
I like to say hi to Uncle John, Brian, all everybody down at the cigar shops, if they're listening. The world-famous cigar bar down in downtown. Cape
Our Crow, friend Richie.
And, and Richie. And Gulf Coast, I spend a lot of my quality time in those three places.
That's a good place to spend quality time.
You got to tell us a story because we've crossed paths and we have so many similar friends, but you were coming down from Northport?
Yeah, so I'm with Uncle John and with Brian, my two buddies, very close friends of mine. And that's one thing I love about Southwest Florida. You know, I knew a lot of retired guys that I worked with. Like my old partner from Homicide lives 3 miles from me. Never even knew he lived here before I even moved down.
Yeah.
I knew he lived in Florida, but who pays attention? You know, guys are like, you know. So we're up at Northport. He's renewing his security guard license or something. So we take a ride and we try to find a cigar bar and we go up there. So I get the Instagram message from you guys. And I got to be honest, I didn't know about you guys because I don't listen to.
You're going to start now, right?
I am now. I already have. I don't listen to regular radio. I listen to usually what I have on my... Because I play drums. I listen to music that I'm going to probably try to learn how to play and stuff. Or I'm listening to some kind of news, you know, serious news to see what's going on in the world. And or the laugh stations, like comedy stuff. Because, you know, to me, that's fun to listen to in the car. So I'm talking. I'm like, Stan and Haney. So my friend Brian's, Stan and Haney! What do they want? I'm like, it looks like they want me to be on their show. You gotta do it! You gotta do it! And Uncle John's in the back, oh yeah, you gotta do it! I'm like, okay.
You gotta wonder what the hell is this.
So now it checks back with you guys. I'm like, oh yeah, Thursday's good. And Brian's like, Thursday's no good, I'm working, I wanna do it. And he's getting mad at me. I'm like, no.
Because their idea is that you're gonna show up with about 10 people right?
Like a Michael Jackson with an entourage.
Oh, that is hilarious. A couple of things. I still want to talk about your days as a cop, and then I want to talk a little bit more about the show, The Dead Files. We're speaking with Steve DeShavi, host of The Dead Files. What got you into the police? Was it after you got out of the Marines and you decided to go to police? What got you into the police force?
Well, I got to be honest with you. Growing up in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, I hated cops, right? I got thrown out of high school. I enlisted in the Marine Corps. It was the funny part about that is I was shooting pool, and the recruiters were on the second floor of the pool hall, and I was on the third floor. I'm up there shooting pool every day because I was working on a garbage truck from midnight to 8 in the morning, and I go shoot pool during the day. And I had been thrown out of high school like a year and a half already, and I'm 17 years old, and the recruiter's up there, and we start talking. Next thing I know, my mother's signing papers for me to go into boot camp. You know, he's telling me, you know, I was all tattooed already. And he's like, you know, what are you doing with your life? All my friends were either in jail or, you know, on the street hustling. And I'm like, well, never really thought about it. My father was a World War II vet. All my uncles were World War II vets. I'm named after my uncle who was killed in World War II. My uncle's armor was a POW in World War II. So it's in my blood, right? So next thing I know, I'm in Paris Island going, what the hell did I do? So now I'm in the Marine Corps, and
Mom didn't sign you up for the Air Force.
Well, she originally thought she was signing, because my father had passed away. My father was gone at this point. My mother thought she was signing for me to take the physical, because I lied to her.
Right.
You know, my mother would have been 98 this year. So back then, she was 43 when she had me. So she had enough.
Later in life, enough headaches.
I'm the youngest of six. Believe me, I didn't get the attention of everybody else. Yeah. So she just signed the papers. She made the guy a big bowl of macaroni and meatballs. And, you know, this Irish recruiter never ate like that in his life.
Right.
And, you know, next thing I know, I'm in boot camp. So while I'm away, my sister filed me for the sanitation test, the fire department, the police department. So when I was home on leave, I happened to catch the police department before I went overseas. So I took the test. I didn't think anything of it. And I got discharged June 29th, July 16th. I was in the police academy. It was just one of those things that it was a job. They wouldn't give me the promotion or the duty station I wanted to re-enlist because I had no high school diploma when I went in. So I was like, well, I got the police department waiting for me. And I'm like, I don't know if I could be a cop. And wind up when you're not a cop, when you do things that you shouldn't have been doing as a kid, makes you a better cop, believe it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So, and that's how that happened.
There.
Yeah. And well, then I worked my way up from foot post into a radio car to plainclothes robbery unit to the narcotics. I worked on the cover for a little bit. Then I worked major case, and then I got picked up by the detective bureau, and I was in homicide after that for the rest of my career.
You know what? I think in situations like that, that young Steve shooting pool, there's divine intervention along this. You were saved.
That was just a
trust me. I tell
transition.
People ask me all the time, "Do you believe in God and all this other stuff?" I'm a firm believer in the universe as a thing out there that kind of guides you.
Mm-hmm.
I could have been dead 20 times over.
Yeah.
And I'm here. I don't know how. I've made mistakes like everybody else. We've all made mistakes. So, you try to learn from them, right? But I still think somebody must have stepped in a couple of times for me.
Yeah.
More than a couple of times. So,
we're talking to Steve DeShavi.
Yeah, when you
Dead
take
Files.
That long look back.
Can you hang out one more break for us?
Okay, of course. For you guys.
We're going to take a break. We'll have more with Steve when we come back. This is the Stan and Haney Show.
You know, radio is a crazy business, and 96 K-Rock is no exception. You see, while others routinely come and go, we stubbornly remain, which begs the perfectly logical question, Stan and Haney, smart or dumb? Stan and Haney
on 96 K-Rock.
The jury's still out on that. Hey, everybody, Stan and Haney. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, Thursday afternoon. And Steve DeShavi from the Dead Files, still with us in the studio.
I am so glad you found this guy.
I know, and I'm so glad we found each other. I got to go right back to the Absolute Law text line because more texts coming in about Steve. Got a text. Guys, I was born and raised in the Bronx. And Steve's accent is making me homesick. But we watched the show every week. Great to have him on. He and his wife watch the show.
Yeah, I run into fans down here all the time. I tell you, Target, you name it. You name a store, I walk into them, and
Yeah, because we still have a problem every once in a while because somebody will recognize our voice. But we have the great ease of the anonymity of radio. But you, on TV, your face is seen coast to coast.
Yeah, when I walk out of the house and I'm not looking that good, it's always when I run into a fan and it'd be like, oh, can we get a picture? I'm like, oh,
not
man.
Today.
I look like I caught my hair with a firecracker.
I also got another text. I don't sound right saying certain things. Now, there's a promo that we're doing for Mother's Day, and I had to read the promo the other day, and it's called, now you'll see how I can't say it. It's for Mother's Day. 96 K Rock is looking for one bad mother, and I can't, it doesn't.
How did they spell it?
M-U-T-H-A.
So it is mother.
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 Texter wanted to know, can you teach me how to say one bad mother? Give it a try. One bad mother.
One bad mother.
It's natural.
Yeah. Rolls right off his tongue. With you, you get
it's
stuck.
Natural. I want to touch on two things again about your career with the New York City Homicide and Police Department.
You mentioned in passing, you were there in New York on 9/11.
Right, I was the first responder.
Tell me what you remember about that day.
Well, I don't try to really get into it too much, but I remember responding. I was driving and driving underneath the FDR when the second plane hit. I was a union delegate. I had gone for bagels that morning, and I walked back to the office. They said, a plane hit the Trade Center. So we all assumed it was a plane out of Teterboro. It was private jets. So we started watching it on the news real quick, and my lieutenant comes running in. He says, you guys got to get down there. It's a commercial plane. So I jump in the car with me and two of my buddies, one of the guys that got the call from Steve Terizzi, that got the call from the network.
Right. You know?
And we're underneath the FDR Drive, and I can hear the plane coming. And I slow down really slow, and I'm right underneath the Brooklyn Bridge when, boom, the second plane hits. And we're like, oh, crap, you know.
I mean, this is not close.
Yeah, this is not a joke. So we go down there. I park the car by the West Side Highway, and we start walking towards the South Tower. And, you know, we're watching people jump. And we're trying to evacuate people. But we're in suits because we're in the homicide squad.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, we're either going to get hit by a body, and nobody's paying attention to us. We got to get to a better spot. So we go into the building, and now we're in the building trying to get everybody out. And people aren't paying attention to anybody in the suit. They're screaming and yelling. It was total mayhem. Last thing I thought is the buildings were going to come down.
Right.
I happened to work off duty doing security at the Sims department store. And I had to pee real bad. I had drank 2 cups of coffee that day.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that knows me, I got a bladder like a 4-year-old.
So. You gotta go now, Steve?
No, I'm good. I went before I came. So we started walking down Greenwich Street towards Sims so I can use the restroom. And South Tower came down.
Oh.
We got knocked off our feet, unconscious, the whole 9 yards. And then, you know, now you're in total darkness of black snowstorm, so to speak.
Right.
Can't breathe. And I always wore a pocket square since I'm a kid. And we were able to breathe going through my hanky.
Wow.
And then I had gotten injured, hurt my back. I had real bad steel dust in the eye. You know, but I'm alive. So I just,
right.
We don't have to get into all that. But I knew we had to make our way towards water, but we didn't know where we were. So that was the hard part. Like, we were so, where are we?
Mm-hmm.
We finally made our way towards...
Yeah, you're in your hometown. You don't know where you are.
Well, you can't see.
Yeah.
It was total blackness. And then, and that was it. You know, we made it to an area where we can breathe. We were covered, and, you know, they hosed us down. We went for treatment, but we didn't have a day off. That was September 11th. The first day off I had was February 13th of 2002.
I mean, and
you know, I worked at the morgue. I was working at the landfill. I was working at the, you know, Ground Zero. And if I wasn't working there, I was working homicide. 12-hour days for 100 days straight.
I know you've heard it a lot, but we mean it. Thank you so much for your service.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I do. I appreciate that.
Somebody like you that's there that day that it kept his head and thank you so much.
You know, I have a tribute tattoo I did, you know, and it's got the skyline.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, I had that designed.
That's some nice ink.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So it covered up a tattoo that said Mom. I know she... She's probably spitting over in her brain.
what were you? Do you remember? Because, like you said, when the first plane hit, I think pretty much everybody was with that of thinking, okay, this was an accident.
Yeah.
Something. I was watching it on the news, and I said, first plane hit, it had to be a small plane hit. And,
yeah, well, you know, maybe it was a sightseeing plane that had some trouble or something. But when you were driving and that second plane hit, you know, nobody had heard of Osama bin Laden or anything. Do you remember what anybody was thinking?
The only person I ever heard talking about Osama bin Laden was Oliver North during the Iran-Contra hearings. They asked him.
He was actually talking about Abu Nadal.
And Osama.
No.
You sure about that?
Urban legend.
Is it?
Yep.
I stand corrected. And see, now you just blew my whole thing about
But, you know, I can't remember his name, but the guy that did security at the tower, he knew. He had just retired. He was really high up, I think, FBI.
Okay.
And he was actually in charge of security at the towers, and he died in the towers, and he knew about it.
I had seen pictures of him in a couple of stores on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. I didn't know who he was.
Yeah, because if we remember, Osama bin Laden was initially we liked what he was doing because the Afghans were fighting against the Soviet Union.
Yeah. And in hindsight, you kind of wish that we would have left the Soviets alone there. They'd still be playing. They'd be still fighting them.
But what I didn't mean to get into all that, but just did you guys have any theories as to what the there's fire all around us? Well, what the hell is happening?
We knew it was a terrorist attack right away. I mean, because we dealt with the 93 bombing at the Trade Center.
Right.
So, and I was there for that.
Really?
I wasn't there when it happened, but I responded. I was in, I forget what unit I was in at the time, but we responded down there. I remember it was cold. And anything to do with the Trade Center, we knew, especially when the second plane hit, like, this is an attack. Because, you know.
Right.
The Trade Center was always a target for these guys. So, you know, it didn't take us long to figure out. But hearing a plane coming in that low and then hit.
Yeah, that one video that those guys that were with the fire department, I think, is like the only video of that. And it's like, wow.
The sound in it.
Yeah, it's pretty surreal. And then the F-16s were flying in, and we didn't know what the hell that was all about. So we didn't know if there was another plane coming. You know, it was. Yeah. Then there was. We finally worked our way over towards the Brooklyn Bridge on the east side, and somebody left a truck and took off.
Oh, God.
And now there's people screaming. There's a truck on the bridge.
Yeah, because you don't
blow.
Know how much further this is going to go.
And now we're all running. And then I got a cramp in my leg. And I'm like,
son of a
yep. And I get my leg cramps up, and my two partners are like, I'm like, just go, don't worry about me. They're like, no, and they're picking me up, they're dragging me.
I want to ask you, because I was reading your days with Homicide. The biggest case you ever worked. Now, what I was reading, was it the thing that happened at the Carnegie Deli?
Yeah, Carnegie Deli homicide. Yeah, that was my case. Yeah.
I mean, what? And you can be called.
And that, you
want to
laugh?
Anytime.
Today's the anniversary of those.
Whoa.
May 10th is the anniversary of the Carnegie Deli homicide. Yeah.
Now, what happened there?
It was just a bunch of people that were dealing drugs, basically high-end marijuana to all the ABC people and NBC, you know, they were high-end stuff. And, you know, these people weren't street savvy, and there was five of them up there. And they were dealing high-end marijuana. What happened was one of the guys that did the murder used to be a roadie for George Clinton. George Clinton's people used to cop from this girl. So, buy for this girl. I don't know.
Right.
If
yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you
we
guys
know.
Do. I don't know if the audience does. But they were buying weed from this woman, and one of the guys came up, this guy Sean Sally, came up with the idea of maybe, hey, you know, there's money up there, let's go rip him off. Well, the guy he took to rip him off was a hardcore guy. Next thing you know, five people are shot 3 years
ago. Yeah.
We got him good on, I got the one guy to confess, and then we searched for Sean Sally for 11 days in Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and then Dallas, and we wanted to get him in Miami. But those guys, they left fingerprints on the duct tape. You know, stuff like that.
All that forensic stuff going, and you nail them.
Yeah, when you present that to a guy, it took me 15 hours to get the confession from the first guy.
So you're questioning. You're in the interrogation room with this guy, and you are
15 hours.
So you get him to confess. Why the hell did he take it to that level when it wasn't necessary?
Well, you know what? You got to wonder. You know, what are you doing?
I understand you want to take somebody's money.
Right, but their attitude is no witnesses, right? So, but for that kind of money, I mean, I think they got maybe away with 20 grand, if that was it.
Geez.
And everybody that was up there, it wasn't just the woman that was dealing drugs there.
Right.
The other people were just, you know, basic Mama Lukes that were just there, you know, hanging out, getting high.
Yep. Oh, man.
They got shot in the back of the head from them. They basically executed them because they had them down on the ground and popped them all in the back of the head. So,
we're speaking.
I'm so glad you got him,
Steve DeShambi. Yeah.
How do you handle that? Being in the room with somebody you know.
Yeah, that's another thing. You know,
I grew up with killers. Trust me, it's easy to spot them. I grew up with guys like that. You know,
I want to talk about the show. A couple of oddball things I want to ask about that always perplex me when I'm watching the Dead Files.
What I meant was, how do you not just
Well, you know,
crack him in the head.
That stays private.
Who says that didn't happen?
What's in your briefcase when you're walking around going up to people's homes? What's in that thing? Because I never see you go to it.
You know, it's funny. Let me see.
In that damn briefcase?
Well, let's see. I'm 55 now, so I got my painkillers. I got my aspirin.
You can't carry a purse.
I got my reading glasses. my iPad, you know, stuff like that.
I also want to know, when I was talking to our producer, D-Train, about this earlier, it's all most times, 99% of the time, you're in some town I never heard of.
Well, bro, Neosho, Show, Missouri. yes. You know, Plattsburgh. You know, we're in places that people are like, oh, it must be so exciting to travel. I'm like, no.
Yeah, because you're going into some backwoods
places. And none
of
these places have decent hotels, you know? Oh. Like, the Chick-fil-A's their five-star restaurant. You're like, you know.
What?
Thanks. Thank you. Hey, but we put you up in a Hampton Inn. Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah.
How about that per diem? You got a chicken sandwich.
Yeah, what do they give you per diem? You got some spending money? They give you some spending money while you're in a podunk town?
My problem is this. I'm good to my crew, and I'm buying them drinks constantly. So by the end of the 2 weeks that I'm out on the road, I got no per diem left. That's why these guys are like, oh. I don't want to leave the show. Yeah, because you're drinking. Alcoholics, right?
What is the... you obviously go through, and the show is very formatted from, you know, beginning, the middle, the end, your investigation that goes, and you pull the records, and you go to the library and all that. Is there, in 10 seasons now doing this thing, is there one episode, and people have it on demand, they can go and check out the episode, is there one that you personally, a natural skeptic and somebody that comes from the line of police work, is there one episode that you did that really stands out for you that something ain't right here? Something, this is really...
You know, that's a tough question, and I'll tell you why. Because on the paranormal end of it, you know, I look at what she comes up with. It's like every week she's like, how do you even know that? Like, we did an episode in Wichita, Kansas, the second episode, and we had just found out because I knew somebody was dead in the house. We just didn't know how. And a woman in her that was 74 years old fell down the steps and broke her neck. I had just gotten this information myself, like, I don't know, 3 hours before the reveal started.
Mm-hmm.
And about a quarter of the way through the reveal, she goes, and I felt there was an older woman here. So let me back it up. She was 74, fell down a flight of stairs, happened in 1985. So I feel there's a woman, probably in her 70s, who something with her neck. She might have broken her neck, and it happened sometime in the 80s. And I'm like, what the, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, and she can't even turn on her phone, let alone try to research something like this. And I just found this out 3 hours before. No way she knew this.
So there are protocols that go into effect can't go and check.
We don't even stay in the same hotel room. Not only that, she doesn't even know where we're... Like, she knows where we're flying into now because she needs to pack accordingly.
Right.
But a lot of times we'll fly into, let's say, Nashville and then drive into North Carolina. You know, something, you know, two-hour drive into where we're working. She'll never know the city or the actual address of where we're going.
Wow.
So what did she say when you first asked her, how the hell do you do this?
I never asked her that.
Never, ever.
I'll be honest with you, I've never asked her that.
She was interviewed.
Because to me, it's like, there's 36,000 cops. Do you know so-and-so? I mean, it's that type of a question for me. She's been doing it since she's four.
Because guess it was a family member that was psychic.
Well, her father is gifted, and her brother is gifted as well. I think her mom has a little bit of a gift, but... She has, you know, the gift.
Yeah.
Between her and you said you'd work with psychics when you were a detective.
Yeah, she blows them all away. I mean,
so
I've never worked with anybody like her. There probably are other people like her, but I've never worked.
You think there's definitely things going on we don't know?
I thought that before, but now she just kind of puts a, you know, little nail in the coffin for me. It's just like it's impossible for her to not to know these things without... having this kind of a gift.
But then she goes and tells the people that they got I remember turning to my girlfriend going, what? You need a chaos magician.
Oh, yeah. Left-handed priest that eats white vegetables.
Yeah. What?
She asks something. She, you know, she'll tell them, and you'll see the looks I do on the show. Sometimes I look at her, I'm like, what the hell did you just say? what?
I also get the indication, and I know a percentage of them have to be the case, that first...
it's usually, if not every time, the woman that calls and says that it had. And sometimes I'm watching you interview the family, like before the meetup and the reveal goes. Yeah. And it seems like sometimes, you know what, Mom, maybe you should go and, you know, take your medication or something, because she's crazy. You can see it. And it's going off onto her kids and husband. Yeah. And it's like she might be the cause of some of these things. Other times I watch it unexplainable. I mean, the facts are the facts that you've dug up, but there are some where this woman's crazy and poor Steve DeShavi's got to sit and listen to this crap.
Well, you know what? It's just like listening to crime victims.
Right.
It's the same thing. And the perpetrator is the paranormal, right? So that's how I look at it. It's like I'm interviewing crime victims. All right, tell me what you saw. I don't want to hear about what you have for breakfast. Just tell me what you saw. How to go down, this, that, and the other thing. Basically, like you do an investigation, and then my job is to figure out who it might be by doing the research, and then her job is to try to, well, both of us try to pair it to what she sees in the wall.
Right.
Sometimes she'll just say, like, this is an elemental, and I'm like, what the frig's an elemental?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So, you know, all the research goes out the window at that point. But at the same time, people get to know what the hell happened on their property.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and you know what? Even if, you know, it's might be real, might not be real. Just for a historic standpoint of where people are living and what went on, because there's war battles there.
It is a lot.
Indians and early settlers were on their property. And I'm sure these people had no idea the history that where their home is of what went on right where they're putting their head on their pillow each night.
Or what actually happened in their home.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, the people are like, what? Somebody got stabbed to death in the basement? Yeah.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, all the neighbors know. They just didn't want to say.
Yeah, you know, it's the funny thing about our show is it's that, like, if you watch just the show with just my part, you might want to watch it. Then you want to watch part of a show just as a show by itself. All right, I get it. But when you combine the two.
That's the thing.
That's why I think where it's been successful.
Because my favorite part of the show, me personally, is she's going around with that bald-headed guy who has a camera that I want to take out of his hands. But she's going around and she's saying all of these things. The favorite part is you putting together the stuff of researching it, the death certificates that you dig up, the photographs, the all the other stuff that goes along with it and the history of where these people are. And then when you come together and do it, that's my favorite part is your detective work.
Yeah, and I get to have a lot of fun with it sometimes. I get to talk to retired cops, which is, I get to get my wheelhouse a little bit and talk about a case.
Yeah.
And that's the fun times I have on the show. When I'm talking about, like, all right, 300 years ago, there was a settler here, five of his kids died from pneumonia. All right, I got it. Okay. But when you get to talk about a juicy homicide that's open or something like that, that you can, you know, sink your teeth into it. It brings me back, because I miss it. You know,
a father in 1873 threw his six children in the lake.
But I tell you the truth, you hear some of these stories, and you're like, oh, my God. I mean, if some of the stuff happened today, people would be outraged.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be insane stuff.
A lot of times nobody prosecuted for it. They went on living their lives, and nothing happened. But why did three wives in 1863 suddenly die and nothing happened to them?
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for coming in
I appreciate you guys having me. I have a lot of fun with you guys.
Steve DeShavi from the Dead Files, and I hope you don't become a stranger.
No, June 1st slots are, they moved us back to Friday nights, June 1st.
Oh, they're moving you?
Yeah, we went from Saturday. They tried us on Sunday for a little bit, but it didn't, you know, that Sunday's a tough night. And we originally started on Friday nights. So now it's Friday, June 1st, the last couple episodes of Season 9, right into Season 10. So all summer long we'll have
awesome.
New episodes.
Awesome. Steve DeShavi, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dead Files. And we're going to take a break here. And if I were you, I'd stick by your radio. Something could happen here. Chance at a thou. We're Stan and Haney.
Whatever you do, Stan, don't press the red button. Damn it. Stan and Haney on 96 K-Rock.
Hey, everybody. Stan and Haney. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Greatly appreciated. You still got about 4 minutes to get the 4 o'clock safe word in. A chance at that thou. Silly. S-I-L-L-Y. Silly. Text it to 40772 or enter it on 96krock.com. Silly, S-I-L-L-Y. You got about 4 minutes to do it.
Great job by you.
Thanks.
That was
he was a great guy. I mean, you know,
as enjoyable an hour as I've had in a long time.
And the fact of the matter is, big fan of the show. I love his show, The Dead Files. Had no idea he was a local guy. And then come to find out, he's got the same friends we've got. Got the same people that hang around each other. Just, you know, like, we never hooked up, never got together. And it was great meeting him.
Yeah, small world.
It is a small world.
After all.
Don't start that song in my head. But I want to thank Steve DeShavi from The Dead Files for coming in and hanging out with us for a little while. I hope he does it again. Here's the deal with him. He knows how to tell a story, and when you figure that it's not second or third person, it's a first person story.
Oh man, has he lived some life.
And it is so compelling to see and hear him recount his life. Amazing stuff.
I love that one. How do you not crack him in the head? Who's to say that happened?
Yeah, exactly. What goes on in the interrogation room stays there. You know, 15 hours of interrogation. Somebody had to kick a chair out.
Yeah. I admire him. I couldn't do that.
No.
I would get way, way too involved in dealing with the victims and then dealing with the perpetrators. It would be the opposite side of the fence. I would be...
And when he was telling the story about 9/11 and he was running from it and they were going over the bridge and he got the cramp, D-Train pointed it out and he even told Steve down the hallway, you left one thing out of the whole story about having to run and get over the bridge. What was it, D-Train? He was wearing something.
I think the very important part of the story is the fact that the man's running from his life in essentially dress flats.
Yeah, wearing the old
dress shoes. And I'm sure that had a great factor on the man's health and his heel and his Achilles heel acting up.
You know,
if he had on a nice tennis shoe, it wouldn't happen.
And you know, it's things that you don't think about and the details that he went into.
Yeah.
Like, he and his co-workers, they're all trying to help people, and they realize, I'm in a suit. These people don't even realize that I'm a cop trying to get something done here.
Half the people in that area were in suits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing stuff. He's a great guy. Dead Files, I guess, moving to Friday night on the Travel Channel. And a lot of people want to know what network. Travel Channel. He's been on Saturday nights for a while, moving to Friday night. What did he say? June 1st? Moving to mm-hmm. Friday night?
And how about that? Not just our connections, but he moves down here not even realizing that his former homicide partner lives 3 miles away from him.
I know it! Let's get you updated on traffic for your drive home this afternoon. Our first look.
Now, K-Rock traffic.
All right, a couple of things on the board. We will start in Fort Myers. Accident. 8400 block of Garden Road. If you live near there, you know. And then Bonita Springs crash, South Tamiami Trail and Coconut Road. And you are up to date. We'll have another traffic update for you in about 30 minutes. Coming up in less than 1 hour, it'll be the newscast of record with Southwest Florida's most respected anchorman, Mark Haney. He is the news. What can you expect? Well, Haney's about to tell you. He's got the headlines.
Coming up in less than an hour on the news, we will have some things for you did not know. Ladies, if you have to go in for an MRI, don't wear your yoga pants.
Jeez.
We'll tell you why. There's a good reason for it.
Less than an hour.
We like to keep you up to date on new products when they become available, and I didn't realize that there was a pent-up demand for it, but evidently there is, because Papa John's is going to start selling gallon jugs of garlic sauce.
Nice. Great. You always give a little side of that there when you get the pie. Now they're going to sell gallons of it.
Finally.
Yeah. Yeah. America has spoken.
Yeah. A garage caught fire in northwest Indiana on Tuesday, and the owners were not at home. However, all of their seven dogs were at home and trapped inside. Oh, we'll tell you what happened. Someone drove their SUV into a lake to win a bet and got their friend arrested in the process. And finally, a man stole a 55-inch TV from the Walmart and asked the police for a ride home. These stories and much, much more unfortunate nonsense coming your way in less than an hour on the news.
Mark, thank you. Laughter. There, baby. There you are, Miss Menthol. 4 o'clock fluffer time. Mark.
Stan.
Everyone.
D-Train.
Haney.
Honey, I'm home.
Woo!
Ah, there she is. There, old doll.
Well, you've had it easy for a while. Been unemployed since 2008.
Yeah.
And for a long time, you've been able to go, hey, what can I do? It's tough out there. Am I right? Am I right?
Yeah.
But now the national unemployment rate reached an all-time low. Yet, you know, you're still on the beach, as they say.
Yeah, not quite ready to jump back in.
With that in mind, we bring you today's list of the
top
reasons you're still unemployed.
Top reasons why you're still unemployed.
You have a set of ethics, and your dream is to work in government. What is it Stan always says?
They're all corrupt.
Puerto Rico.
You were fired from your last three jobs for excessive flatulence.
I'm here to stay, brother.
So isn't the flatulence.
Your resume boasts that you are, quote, proficient in Facebook.
Is this your first day?
No, it's not.
Remember my first day?
Yeah.
My dad dropped me off in the family truckster. For some reason, companies have a hard time envisioning you as their CEO when you show up to the interview wearing your shockingly authentic Gandalf costume.
There he is, in costume.
I am Captain Chaos.
It's him. Your last job was managing the campaign of Hillary Rodham Clinton. Former co-workers describe you as a slightly more grabby Matt Lauer. Lat Mauer.
Yep.
That's a better name.
I like it. It has a ring to it.
How are you? I'm Lat Mauer. And I'm here to find your daughter. There you go. See, that'd be a great detective show.
Yep.
What?
Lat Mauer.
Yeah, let's get to Shavi on that one.
Yep. I mean, come on. Everybody, you know, Hollywood's always going, hey, where's the next Matt Houston? I just gave it to you. You inadvertently mixed your LinkedIn profile with your Grindr profile.
How dare he?
Yeah.
Your resume has bloodstain splatters on it.
Yeah.
And finally, the very top reason you're still unemployed.
Yes.
You're only interested in extremely lucrative, well-paying jobs in radio.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And that, my friend, is the 4 o'clock.
Elvis has left the building.
That's it, man.
Freddy, email ahoy at stanandhaney.com.
At stanandhaney what?
At stanandhaney.com.
Okay.
I thought you said Stan and Haney caught Dom. Like Lat Mauer.
All right.
Between the two of us, we got this.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been doing this a while.
And it's only going to get better.
Sure. As we begin to lose our motor function.
Yep.
I don't know.
Don't have quite the neurons we had, you know, a week ago.
Yeah. Yep. They were mine 10 years ago. This is our buddy George the Mailman. It's that time of year again.
That's my line.
Yeah, but this time it's I have to say it.
You want me to do it
for
you?
Go ahead.
Well, it's that time of year again.
Guys, I once again come to you with hat in hand. Our food drive is this Saturday, May the 12th, and I hope you'll give us a little plug here. Well, I am, George. You know the story. Leave a bag or box of non-perishable food out by the mailbox on Saturday, and a letter carrier or a volunteer will pick it up and take it to the post office, where it will be sorted and trucked off to the food bank. John Kuhn was telling us.
Outstanding.
Harry Chapin Food Bank. Mm-hmm. It's a big time for them as well.
And they can't make it any easier for you.
Yep.
That's as easy as it gets.
It's the easiest way to give. It's our 26th year, and so far we've collected over 1.6 billion pounds of food nationally.
You guys are doing good.
Yes, they sure are.
It also occurs when we are heading into the summer and kids won't be getting their school lunches. Thanks for the support over the years. And yes, your wife has dropped off a couple of your T-shirts, so thank you very much, George, the mailman.
Doing good work.
Evidently, Mark writes in and has taken it upon himself to let his comments be known. I say this because it appears Stan has found a better half that is willing to put up with him and his moods.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Wow.
For a while, we have been hearing my lady friend. It has now graduated to my girlfriend, and it doesn't sound like it's going to end anytime soon, so congratulations, sir. You'd better be nice to this one, Stan. Even though she can't get a grip on baked macaroni and cheese, she's hung around long enough to see that dating a local celebrity still only gets the best table closest to the kitchen.
That's it.
But here's the thing, and why I think it might last.
Why?
He's not nice to her.
Who?
You.
I'm not. I am nice to her.
No.
What do you mean?
I mean, you're just you.
Yeah, I am who I am, and she accepts that.
And you have to admit, a lot of women, when you're just being you, think you're not very nice.
Yep.
She, however, has a different opinion.
That's right. She knows that I'm radio's good guy.
Well, huh.
Yeah. I'm very happy for you.
Thank you.
I'm amazed by it. I will tell you, I think it's probably the biggest long shot since Giacomo, but it happened.
I agree with you. Ladies and gentlemen, The Guardian.
Jesus.
Mm. Ahoy, gentlemen. Guys, I wish that anyone who might question what freedom means watch those three Americans that came home last night. And you know what? 3 o'clock in the morning, our president's up and awake and made the wife get up too. Ready and waiting for those heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Just watch their faces. The joy of being home in this great country. It's almost undescribable. Welcome home.
And you know, I saw it in an article, and it's so true. Who would have thought, even a couple of months ago, that you would be hearing the President of the United States saying, I would like to thank Kim Jong-un.
Yep, and our summit will be here, and here comes a couple of our, three of our people.
No, that's, Stan, it's okay if you mention it a little bit.
Yeah.
But let's get back to Michael Avenatti and Stormy Daniels.
You know, and also put on top of that, that this president has nominated for the head of the CIA a woman, first time ever.
Career officer.
And a career officer who's been in the trenches, and Democrats want to see a woman fail.
Well, I thought it was about empowering women.
Yep.
Guess
unbelievable.
Yes, it's got to be the right one.
The right kind of women.
Mm-hmm.
Get that straight.
We'll be back. We're Stan and Haney, 96 KROQ.
A distant deep space civilization has been consistently sending signals to the people of Earth for millennia. For the past two decades, we've been sending them this. Then, they stopped sending the signal. Oh, well. Them if they can't take a joke. Stan and Haney on 96 KROQ.
Hey everybody, Stan and Haney, thank you for joining us. Question of the week coming up here in just a second. 30 minutes away from Mark Haney and the news. But we do this every week. We pose to you a question that is not a yes or no answer. It's your story. We'll pose the question of the week. We'll do some traffic, give you a chance to pick up your phone and dial in and tell us your story. You have the right answer to our question of the week. And today, we've asked this question before, but I'm going to put a little bit of a caveat, and I'm going to even add more to it, because I just spoke with our production guy, Rick Peterson.
Saint of a man.
Unbelievable man. Has been working for this company longer than Haney and I have. And before then, I think he was at Wink. He's been around forever. He's ancient. But still a nice guy.
But very boyish looks.
Very boyish looks. You know, I remember his kids around the building when they were on their little league team, and now all his kids are, like, extremely successful in life. But I asked him, and he kind of added a little something to this. Here's our question of the week. We want your answer. This part we've done before. What was your first job? But I'm going to add to it, if it's not your first job, what's the oddest job that you had where you got a paycheck? What was your first job or your oddest job before you started your career? Or maybe you're in it now. And do you remember how much you made? Do you remember what the... Because everybody's talking about the minimum wage. They got to bring up the minimum wage. Got to make a living wage. Let's raise that minimum wage. What was your first job or the oddest job you ever had? And do you remember how much you made? 277-9600. Tell us your answer. Let's get you updated on traffic for your drive home.
Now, K-Rock traffic.
All right, a couple of things on the board. We'll start in Fort Myers. Busted ass POS in the road. Miramar Lakes Boulevard and Ben Hill Griffin Parkway. Then we got this one in Lehigh Acres. Crash, June Avenue North and Sunshine Boulevard North. And you are up to date. We'll have another traffic update right before Mark Haney and the news. Question of the week. It's your answer. What was your first job? Or if not, what was your oddest job? And how much did you make? Do you remember what your wage was? What your hourly wage was? 277-9600. If you get a busy signal, realize that once we finish with a caller, it frees open a line. Well, oddest job was my first job that I didn't get paid a
check for, and that was when I was at the log cabin restaurant. I had to get up in the middle, and I was...
Is that the one where you hurt yourself?
No. My first real job was as the steak chef at America's favorite steakhouse.
Mr. Steak.
And Haney and I were having a little debate of what the minimum wage was. And I can remember it vividly. It was $2.35 an hour. And shortly after I started, they raised it to $2.65 an hour.
Now, does Connecticut have its own minimum wage?
I have no idea, but I know it was $2.35 and it went up to $2.65. And I remember, woo! And I also remember when it went to $2.80 an hour. You, we're talking outside, you got ripped.
Yeah, I think it's because I was a kid. He felt like he didn't have to pay me minimum wage.
Because yours, it was the drugstore.
That was not my first job.
What was your very first job?
My very first job that I legitimately got paid for was working for my Uncle Bob.
What did Uncle Bob do?
He ran the fun center and sold portable buildings.
Ah, awesome. And did he pay you? Did you get a check or was it under the table?
Oh, of course it was under the table. But I'm realizing this now. I started working for him in the summers. I had to have been like 12 years old.
Yeah.
Man, I...
Been working all your life, Haney.
Why?
I started at the log cabin at 15. Keep in mind, we had a farm. So I was always working.
Oh, but yeah.
Job.
My parents formally apologized to me for all the stuff they used to make me do.
But 15 at the log cabin. I was 16, Connecticut, when you could work and have a job, 16.
Yeah, because that's why I bet he didn't pay me minimum wage, because I was like, at the pharmacy, I was like 14.
Yeah, it's child labor laws. D-Train, first job or oddest job, and do you remember what you were paid?
First job was working at Pizza Hut, oiling pans and making pizza for a whopping $4.25 an hour.
This is a rich boy
here. Yeah, this is a rich boy.
Strangest job. A lot of places I work for go out of business, and so I was living on the west side of Columbus, and I took a job as a temporary agency just to get some money.
Yeah.
And it's one of those joints they pay you at the end of each day. Weirdest, most boring, lamest job I ever did was to apply stickers to the top of CDs of some software that this little company had made. So for 8 hours, I'm literally just putting a CD on a spindle and just putting a sticker on top, smoothing it out, sliding it down, repeat.
Rick was telling me why I talked about oddest jobs. He said to me in the hall, he goes, what's your question of the week? I said, well, we're going to go with what was your first job and what did you make? He said, I don't remember what I made. He said, but I had the most monotonous job as a summer job. He worked at a box factory and where AC Delco spark plugs, the boxes that they had to assemble and all these other company boxes. And he said, it's probably all done by machine now, but I had a little hammer in my hand and you'd knock the box so that the perforations would fall off the excess, as he said, the scrap. And then you'd move it along to the glue people and down the assembly. And that's what he did.
It makes an 8-hour shift feel like 15.
That's what he said. Horrible. He said it was just mind numbing. 277-9600. Ahoy, who's this?
This is Jackie from Alva.
Hey, Jackie from Alva. What was your first job or your oddest job? And do you remember what you made?
Yes, I do. I worked at Star Pharmacy in North Fort Myers, and I delivered prescriptions, and I made $5 for every delivery.
Ah!
Included.
How old were you?
I just turned 16.
Nice.
Well, then you probably retired by 20 making that kind of
that
money.
Yeah. See you later. 277-9600.
I feel like a schmuck working for $2.13.
This is what I can't believe, because we were saying, well, when did you start working? I said, I was 15 in 1977, and that's when I was at the log cabin and getting paid big money under the table. Let's put it this way. I was making a lot more than minimum wage, but it was all, There you go, kid.
Good job.
Yep, good job. But at 16, 1978, at Mr. Steak, it was $2.35 an hour. And you are about 5 years younger than I am, and you should have started later, and you're making $2.13 an hour. The guy was ripping you off, Haney.
What year?
What year what?
Haney was getting ripped off.
What year did you work at the
14,
pharmacy?
Well, I was 14, so that would have been, what, 1980?
80.
Is that right?
Yeah, minimum wage in 1980 was $3.10. He was ripping you off.
Big time. 2.13. Jeez, that guy.
Man, I worked like a dog for that guy, too. I love him, though.
Yeah. Ahoy, who's this?
This is Pat.
Pat, what was your first job or the oddest job you have had, well, and do you remember what you made?
Well, my aunt used to work at Time Realty in Cape Coral, and she had me holding signs out on Cape Coral and Del Prado.
Probably in the dead of summer.
Oh, yeah. Yep, dead of summer, all weekend, making really good money, though, $15 an hour. When I was 14, you know, couldn't, $15 an hour, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm a pretty young guy myself now, so that's
all right.
Pretty good money. You know?
$15 an hour, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
all right, what is the minimum wage now?
$7.25.
Are you serious? It's $7.25?
Since July 24th of 2009.
See, we'd all be rich now.
We would be. Can you imagine if young Haney or young Stan was pulling down $7.25 an hour?
We'd be stepping in high cotton, my friend.
Darn right. 277-9600. What was your first job or what was your oddest job? And do you remember what you made? Ahoy, who's this?
Hey, this is Barbie.
Hey, Barbie. I'm Ken. What was your first job?
My first job, I worked in my brother-in-law's florist store, but my oddest job was I fixed hair on dead people.
No, hold it. And I know
you know a little something about it.
I know a little bit about that. And was that family run or did you apply for that job?
No, I was asked. One of the hairdressers couldn't show up that day, so. They asked her who she would recommend, and she recommended me. And so I went, and it was my first trip downstairs to the embalming room.
Yes.
But,
yeah. What was your? What was? Now
was it anything you'd ever thought about doing before, or was it just sprung on you?
It was just sprung on me, but I thought, you know, what the heck, you know. It was. They were going to pay me $10 a head, so I thought, okay, I'll do it.
Literally a head. And what was? I just want to know. First day, first time downstairs, and I know all about the funeral homes and going downstairs. And you walked in there. What was the first thing that went through your head?
It smelled.
Yeah, with the formaldehyde.
Yeah. And then I walked downstairs and. The funeral guy was with me, funeral director or funeral assistant, and I thought to myself, I'm going downstairs into a basement with a dead body with some guy I don't know.
What year was this?
Probably 1972, 73.
Oh, man.
Now, what was the biggest difference between dealing with the hair of the living versus the deceased?
Well, they love it.
277-9600. Each and every one of them loved it.
Yep.
Yeah.
But they can't turn their head.
Yeah.
They can't look down.
But I'm sure a stylist would know. You tell somebody to put your head down or turn your head. Eventually, they start moving it back. You move a dead head, and it stays. You're not gonna. And if you nick them, they don't even know.
Oh. No, you just circle the nick with a magic marker and makeup people will
make
fix
up.
It.
Ahoy, who's this?
Hello.
Yes. Ahoy.
Hi, this is your friend Tom from the East Coast.
Tom from the East Coast. Now. How do we know Tom Haney?
Because he listened to us when we were in Melbourne.
Oh, yeah. Melbourne.
Okay, I worked on the North Shore of Long Island in a place called Cold Spring Harbor. I could look across the sound and see Connecticut, Stanford. The first job I had field before I could drive. My mom said, I'm going
to... Your phone is dying. We lost you. You must be calling from Melbourne.
By the way.
Yes.
You don't ever call it that. It's Melbourne.
Of course.
And Melbourne is in Australia.
If you're from there, you call it Melbourne. And anybody, I can remember back in the day where you were up north, because that was a very large developments going on in Melbourne, and looking at, well, yeah, we're thinking about going down there to a place, Melbourne.
Yeah, isn't that there in Brevard County?
Yeah, Brevard. You really know the reporters that do their work if they are doing something from Brevard County or in Melbourne. Also, reporters that have to do a story in Kissimmee.
Mm-hmm. You mean Kissimmee?
Yep. And you'll know you're not doing your homework, son.
Could be doing the greatest job of reporting in the world, but when they mispronounce stuff,
yep,
you tune them out.
Ahoy, who's this?
Hi, guys. It's Jessica.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi. My first job was at Major Magic, which was like a Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, Major. Where was this? What state?
Ohio.
Okay, Major.
I've never heard of Major Magic.
Me neither.
Yeah, I think it was just a one-off place, but it was very, very popular when it opened. In fact, it was open before we got a Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, wow.
So was it like a magician owned the place?
Yeah. Well, he was Major Magic, so it was like a military guy.
Okay.
Jeez.
Was that on Moore Street in Sylvania?
Monroe, yeah. In Toledo, yep.
Yep.
Toledo, Ohio. Is it still open, D-Train?
Hold on. But it looks like, you remember Showtime, which was kind of an offshoot of Chuck E. Cheese? It looks kind of like that.
All right. What did you make?
425. I think
D-Train
is about a year or 2 younger or older than me.
425. See, Haney and I are looking now, at that big money.
What did you have to do at Major Magic? Were you sawed in half or anything?
No, I had to be Major Magic.
What?
You were Major Magic?
You were Major Magic?
Yes. Yes, it was miserable.
So, did you have to learn tricks?
No, you had to put on this giant costume.
And then just walk around, doop-de-doop-de-doo?
Pretty much. You don't have to talk because, I was supposed to be male, for one thing. And you were only allowed to do a 15-minute shift in the costume because it was so hot inside.
Yep. Let me ask you this. Doing 15 minutes in the costume and it was so hot, I bet you, because I've known a lot of people that had to put on these costumes from Disney to local people.
Yeah, me included.
It smelled, didn't it?
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah.
It was so disgusting.
You would
think
they could
dry clean the head.
Yeah, you would think they could design these things so that they could be cleaned easier or some sort of anti-funk agent.
No, and, I was young at the time, so I didn't really think about it. But now I'm like, all the other people, different shifts, all their bodies were in the same space.
Yes. Oh, I'm looking at Major Magic's right now, and you were Major Magic with the big white curled-up mustache?
Yep.
Oh,
Major Magic's All-Star Pizza Review.
Oh, how was the pizza?
All-Stars in the name.
Nobody went there for the pizza.
No,
it's just like Chuck E. Cheese. They had the animatronic characters that played a band, and they did a lot of Beatles songs, which was kind of cool.
Did you like the talking piano?
Yes, that was cool. the drummer was an alligator, if I remember correctly.
Oh, God.
Now, did you have any run-ins with children when you were Major Magic?
Oh, yeah. They would tackle you. And, they would, wrap themselves around your leg. And,
because they loved you. They loved you.
Yes. And, you have these giant, Mickey Mouse glove hands, so you couldn't do anything. Enormous plastic shoes that went over your regular feet. I mean, and you couldn't see anything either. So if somebody, was on your legs, you couldn't even see who it was.
God.
You had no, your vision was so limited.
Yeah, they closed on July 8th of 2010.
Oh, they closed in 2010.
According to the owner, they just could not compete with other entertainment options.
Yeah.
Damn Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
I took my daughter back there a few years ago when she was little, and they hadn't maintained it, so I'm not surprised.
See you later.
Yeah. Imagine how that costume is now.
If you'd like to answer our question of the week, you can do so at Ahoy at StanandHaney.com.
And I don't know if the listener noticed, but Stan is in such a great mood.
My song right here. I don't know how I made it, but I sure have.
This is
blue.
The definitive Stan song.
This was Stan in high school. Loved this song, and it was just a regional hit by NRBQ.
And I still think about you every time I ride in my car.
We'll be back. Thank you, Haney. 96K Rock.
Garrett, Hawaii 5-0.
Batman.
Kojak.
Frank Cannon.
Jim Rock.
Stan here.
This is 86 calling control.
I'm Mark Haney.
John Robinson commanding.
Les speaking.
Are you finished?
Stan and Haney.
96 K-Rock.
Hey, everybody. Stan and Haney, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Greatly appreciated. Mark Haney in the news in just seconds. We'll also update you on traffic. 6 o'clock, Roger Marley will be here. He'll have a 6 o'clock safe word for you. Chance for a thou and take you through your evening. Let's get you updated on traffic for your drive home.
Now, K-Rock traffic.
All right, just one thing on the board this half hour. It's in Lehigh Acres. Crash, Sunshine Boulevard North and West 12th Street. And you are up to date. We'll have one more traffic update for you in about 30 minutes.
You know, you got to hand it to the Israelis. Have you seen the video?
Well, they went and threw some lead back or shot down what was coming out of Syria and the Iranians.
They put out a great 20-second video with the camera mounted on the weapon, and it just takes you right in to where they go after the missile launcher. And as it's coming in, you see a couple of ba-ba-bas standing just a couple of yards away. They have no idea it's coming.
Bummer. Because, you know, they have the Israelis have that protective dome. Anything that's shot out of
the Iron Dome,
they get it shot out of the air, and then they bounce back with a couple of things.
Yeah, and they bounce back, evidently, at every known Iranian position in all of Syria.
Thanks to us, because we gave them the weapons.
Well, and what they're taking out are Russian weapons.
Yep. Mark?
Let's hope it ends there.
Yes. Well, they think it's destabilizing, but it's all because the Iranians are all mad that Trump got out of the deal. Big babies. Mark,
well, their intentions aren't good. Look at what they've done. Look at what they've done since that deal. They're in Syria. They're in Yemen. And when people, criticize things like that, you have no idea what the president knows when he makes that decision. I know more than most, and the things that they're up to in our country and in our part of the world would blow you away.
I got to tell you about this, and I wasn't going to bring it up, and we do have to get to news, but this is, you bring this up. I just watched this morning a 1979 interview. You got to realize we've been at war one way or the other with Iran since 1979, and our hostages were taken from the embassy, and the Ayatollah came back and they overthrew the Shah.
Uh-huh.
David Frost, one of the best interviewers of all time, was interviewing the Shah of Iran, 1979, already suffering from cancer, already dying, and he was being interviewed in his exile before passing away. The guy was so matter-of-fact, and David Frost asks the Shah. Now, the Ayatollah is back there, blah, 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 going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He asks the Shah, did you abdicate your throne for when the Ayatollah came back? And he looks at him, not a flinch, not a smile, not a frown. This is not in our language. I don't abdicate. I'm a king. I don't abdicate. And David Frost says to the Shah, are you willing to go back to Iran and
face trial. And the Shah looked at David Frost and said, me go back to Iran to face trial? I'll go back to Iran, but I won't face trial. These people will face trial. These are the criminals. And it was like, whoa, the hair standing up on the back of your neck. The Shah of Iran wanted nothing but to be part of the world and was explaining to David Frost that you give us 10 more years with our oil and everything that we're doing. He said, our area will be one of the best places to visit, best places economically in the world for business and anything you want. But I got a chill when they said, do you go back to stand trial? Me stand trial? What about them? They're the criminals. And he was, and he was, he died about, 6 months later, 6 weeks later.
And it really is crazy because what is going on there now is not really their culture.
Nope.
It's alien.
Mark Haney in the news starts right now.
This is the Evening News with Bernard Kalb in San Clemente, Bob Schieffer in Mitchell, South Dakota, Barry Serafin in Towson, Maryland, Terry Drinkwater in Rockville, Maryland, Jeff Williams in Ayrshire, Iowa, Jed Duval in Cheyenne, Wyoming, Richard Threlkeld in Prineville, Oregon, Bruce Dunning in Cat Lai, South Vietnam, and Bruce Hall in Miami.
Hi, I'm Garrick Utley, and you're listening to Southwest Florida's most respected anchorman, Mark Haney.
Good afternoon. This is the news for today, Thursday, May 10th.
Double M, XV, triple I.
Telling it like it is, I'm Mark Haney. You know, recently, you mentioned, Stan, that it's time for things you didn't know. You mentioned that you were toying with the idea of learning a new language.
Yes.
I don't know if it was still happening with you or we were right at the cutoff, but there was a time when Latin was very important.
Yep. And it, I was.
Did they still offer it when you were in school?
Pope Paul the VI, he was Pope in the 60s, visited the United States, I think, like in 1965. He was the one that made the great order that Mass, Catholic Mass, could be said in English and not Latin. Because before then, it was all in Latin. And I know my mom, when she was in high school and college, took Latin as a language, and they call it the dead language. But everything is based from it, and Latin was like a requirement. You had to learn Latin.
We have had 12 presidents who were fluent in Latin. That makes it the most common second language for presidents. The next most popular, 8 presidents spoke this language.
Spanish. German. French.
Greek.
Well, that,
classical civilization.
Your philosophers and all that and reading all that stuff.
If I were to show you a Cheez-It cracker, what shape would you say?
Square.
Not necessarily. You see, Stan, technically, they're rectangles.
They're square.
They are 1 inch by 0.95 inches, making them a rectangle.
Please. You know that. You know, I at sitting at a table holidays, always had my grandmother's boyfriend who moved right in after my grandfather died.
Oh, that Joe.
Yeah.
Oh,
and whenever you would go, I still remember my buddy Dave, who is one, to this day, one of the greatest. works for an architecture firm, but he has designed so many buildings. He did the whole thing for the Beijing Olympics and designing a lot of the stuff. He's designed office buildings in Atlanta and all that. And he was already an architect. And we were sitting at
Paul Kersey.
Yes, an architect. and my grandmother's boyfriend, that Joe. And they would tell you, well, this is such a... And then this guy who never made it out of the sixth grade but was a know-it-all. Well, not necessarily. And I can remember my buddy Dave finally having enough, and he goes, what the hell are you talking about, Joe? Are you an architect?
Well, not necessarily an architect, but I've been around buildings. And
I've been in a building.
All that crapola. Yeah, look at that. That's a square.
Not necessarily. You know, we often are asked, Stan and Haney, you sound like the best of friends. Well, nothing could be further from the truth.
Yep, this is a fact.
We don't speak off the air.
No, nothing in common.
You know who else is like that?
Who?
Penn and Teller.
You know, I believe it. Do you know that when we went and saw them, after the show, they always do a meet and greet. They're on two different sides of the room.
Mm-hmm.
They come in from two different sides of the stage, and Penn Jillette does a lot of stuff without Teller around.
I remember when we went to their show, and you walk in to the big theater, and they ask you to do something for a bit they're going to do during the show.
Right.
We had to write something down or something.
Yeah, the other time I went there, they asked you to go up and take a look at a box and to see how somebody could get out of this box.
But it was the coolest thing because I wasn't expecting it. So you're asked to, everybody files up onto the stage to do whatever.
Examine or write your name or...
And they've got just like a little jazz combo playing up there on the stage, and you're not really paying attention to it. And as I'm making my way off the stage, I turn around and I realize that's Penn playing that upright bass.
Yep.
And nobody noticed him.
Oh.
And I turn around, I looked at him, and I smiled, and he nodded his head and winked and went right back to playing.
Nobody even knew. He's up there, you know. It's 20 half
you're
hour
just,
before the show
you're
starts.
You're just not expecting it.
No.
But I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, they are not friends. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they're enemies, but they don't hang out with each other. And they say they consider it a business relationship, and not being friends is why they have lasted so long in show business.
They've lasted a long time.
Yeah, so have we.
You're darn right we have.
Where do Brazil nuts come from?
Brazil. Come on. You know what?
Not
necessarily. Yeah, that's too obvious. You wouldn't be doing it if it was that obvious.
Bolivia produces 47% of all the Brazil nuts in the world.
They also produce something else.
Yeah. Marching powder.
Yep.
Here you go. Here your marching powder. I'm worried this might be poison. No. Military marching powder. I don't know why Bolivians speak with an Asian accent, but they do.
You know what? And hearing it coming from you, believable.
Mm-hmm. But don't worry. Brazil is a strong second place at 40%, and Peru accounts for about 10%. The famous film, The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, great one.
Big stars in that movie.
Oh, your Garland, your Jack Haley, your...
Should have been Buddy Ebsen.
Buddy Ebsen.
Should have been.
Ray Bolger.
And that little dog, too. The little dog that played Toto made $125 a week.
Whoa.
Which incidentally means Toto was paid more than any of the midgets who played the munchkins.
They fed him with booze.
They got their pay in other ways.
Damn right they did. Didn't we have somebody on before they died that was a one of them a munchkins and mm-hmm. talked about how they all hell breaking loose with them. Nonstop partiers.
Oh, yeah. And filthy.
Yeah.
Ladies, we know that you like to wear your yoga pant everywhere you go. Yeah,
especially you heavy ones when you travel.
But please, please, ladies, pay attention, because I'm going to tell you something very important about one time you definitely should not wear your yoga pant. Doctors are warning people, do not wear yoga pants when you're going to have an MRI.
Why? Why?
Because they have learned the hard way that when the magnetic imaging meets Lycra and spandex, it can burn the pants right onto your skin.
Yeah, I think it's the reaction.
Now, they say that most staff members are aware of that risk, and they will ask you to change if you do wear yoga pant for your MRI. But to be on the safe side, it's better that you know not to wear them in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, this is something that they learned the hard way. In a moment.
I am Bill O'Reilly with today's good news. Here's Southwest Florida's most respected anchorman, my colleague, Mark Haney.
Bill, you know, I've always liked Papa John's. I like them even better now that they're not affiliated with the Neyland NFL.
Yeah.
Does that surprise you?
Oh, not surprised.
Well, Papa John's has won over a lot of people by including a tiny container of garlic sauce with every order.
John, right, they won me over with that.
Well, get ready for a game changer, folks, because yesterday, Papa John's announced, due to popular demand, they're going to sell gallon jugs of that stuff.
Woo!
Gallon jugs of their garlic sauce.
Count me in.
For a mere $20.
Count me out.
They go on sale Friday at some of their stores and online. They say, get it while you can. Only available for a limited time.
I want to go to our own Mr. Pizza, D-Train.
And he will complain if a pizza is not done properly.
Darn right he will. Domino's will throw in the little pepper.
No, that's Papa John's, too.
Oh, really?
Yep.
What are
you don't get extras.
You don't get extras with your Pizza Hut or your Domino?
No.
A dipping saw, a little pepper.
You got to pay for it.
Did you put anything into your pizzas when you sent them out?
No, nothing by special demand, but what I would do personally on my own breaks, I'd get the small pan pizza, just the crust.
Yeah.
Slather some butter on it.
Yeah.
Sprinkle some cinnamon on it. Run it through the system there and make myself some cinnamon toast.
Wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
They got a secret system?
No, that was my system.
No, you said you'd run it through the system. Dude, so is it like some sort of
like a
Rube Goldberg thing?
They have those conveyor belt ovens.
Every one of them has a conveyor belt oven, but...
Perfectly timed.
A Pizza Hut conveyor belt oven. Slightly different temperature... Then say a Domino conveyor belt. Everything
different
is proprietary,
crust.
Yep. So that their pizza comes out their way.
And then they have the door in the center in case somebody wants it cooked a little bit extra, but not all the way. Then once it came out, you put it in halfway, let it go halfway through again.
See, didn't know that.
Wonder if they make home conveyor belt systems.
That would be, you know, take up a lot of space. I bet you if you had a big house, I'd like one like that.
Your own conveyor belt system?
Yeah.
This whole limited time gallon
sounds
to me like they're trying to push some old product before it expires.
I think you're right. Thank you, DJ.
You know, I love this guy because he always sees the glass as half empty.
Yeah.
Incidentally, the 1 ounce cups of garlic sauce.
Yeah.
Account for about 150 calories and 17 grams of fat. So,
for one of the little cups?
Yeah, so you ramp that up to a gallon, you're looking at a container with 19,000 calories and 2,100 grams of fat.
Woo! And we know people that had to drink it.
Isn't that a Zito and Garrett thing where they just drink stuff?
Yeah. Oh, turkey gravy.
Yep.
You know what? Maybe this year, use the Papa John's garlic dipping.
You know,
sauce.
And I'll give them a tip of the cap. At least they're selling it in America, unlike McDonald's that puts Big Mac sauce out in Canada, but we can't get it here.
Correct.
Unless we import it from Canada.
Our friends bring it to us.
Yep, and then that Trudeau's got to get his grubby hands on our money. You want Big Mac sauce? You got to come through me,
yeah.
The Trudeau kid.
Yeah.
You like my socks?
Yeah. You like my costume I'm wearing?
Yeah. I stole it from the Bush family.
Yeah.
Because they wear funny socks, too. 28-year-old Raimundo Espiro was hanging out with his a-hole buddies at Lake Havasu in Arizona on Saturday.
Oh, that's living.
You know, I've often wondered, would it be nice to go to Lake Havasu?
I would like to.
Well, Raimundo, his friend made a bet with somebody about how far they could drive into Lake Havasu without getting their SUV stuck.
Well, you lose.
And what do you suppose happened?
Got stuck.
They did get stuck. The SUV was about halfway submerged. No word on how much damage it caused, but the SUV had to be towed out of the water, and then, you know, word gets around, and the next thing you know, the cops show up. Woo!
Yep.
And while they were there, dealing with all these a-holes and their madcap shenanigans, they realized that fun-loving guy Raimundo was wanted on an outstanding warrant, so his fun day at the lake ended up in jail.
Good.
Hello, I'm Bill Curtis of Investigative Reports. For our final story, here is Southwest Florida's most respected anchorman, Mark Haney.
Bill, 24-year-old Tavon Wilson.
What's going on there, Tavon?
Went to the Walmart in Columbus, Georgia last week. Picked up a 55-inch Samsung television and walked out of the store through the automotive department.
Damon!
But you know, a 55-inch TV is pretty heavy and bulky.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently, he was having a bit of trouble carrying it as he walked home with the stolen television. He saw two police officers and hailed them, asked them if they wouldn't mind giving him and his stolen TV a ride home. While they were discussing this, the call came over the radio from the Walmart about a missing television. These super sleuths connected the dots, and Tavon was arrested for shoplifting.
Ah, brilliance. Brilliance.
And that's the news for today, Thursday, May 10th.
There he is. Double M, XV, triple I.
I am Southwest Florida's most respected anchorman.
There he is. Little Marky Haney telling it like it is.
Remind me tomorrow, we need to have a serious discussion about bug zappers.
Oh, yes, because you know what? Haney and I, we're having this, and we have a little bit of a debate. We have a little bit of a debate about a bug zapper.
Probably, you know what? The only thing is we could have an intelligent discussion about a bug zapper, but Dave's going to be here tomorrow, and he's going to ruin the conversation. Because he knows
he probably
about
knows
bugs.
A thing or two about
he
it.
He doesn't know anything about
not
a bug
zapper.
The Garrett, Hawaii 5-0.
Batman.
Kojak.
Frank Cannon.
Jim Rock.
Stan here.
This is 86 calling control.
I'm Mark Haney.
John Robinson commanding.
Mess speaking.
Are you finished?
Stan and Haney. 96 K-Rock.
Hey, everybody. Stan and Haney. Thank you for spending your afternoon with us. Greatly appreciated. Roger Marley coming in at 6 o'clock. He's going to have a 6 o'clock safe word for you. Chance at a thou, and then take you through the rest of your evening. Let's get one more look at traffic for your drive home this afternoon.
Now, K-Rock traffic.
All right, a couple of things on the board. We will start in Fort Myers. Got a crash. Metro Parkway in Idlewild Street. And then one more, it's in Bonita Springs. Crash. Woods Edge Parkway. I guess it's right on the edge of the woods.
And is there a park there?
No, but it's a parkway. Woods Edge Park Parkway and South Tamiami Trail.
Bet there's nothing but concrete.
And you.
Concrete and asphalt.
Are up to date. Let's laugh.
It's time once again for another Stan and Haney stand-up comedy classic. Classic comedy like it used to be on 96 K-Rock.
I actually moved to New York City in 1978 to make it as an actor. For the next 29 years, I worked as a waiter. That's a lot longer than is considered understandable. By 1982, the job had lost its freshness for me. Then it became one of those things that I do that I don't place a premium on being the best. I would go to work essentially to leave. Always worked in a very casual restaurant, which suited me. I could never work upscale. I know two things about wine. We have it or we don't.
Amen.
I had a customer once, he said to me, "What's the difference between the Cabernet and the Cote du Rhone?" I said, $1.
Have yourselves a great evening. Lord willing, we'll be back here tomorrow, 2 o'clock. Big Friday show, or the Stan and Haney show, 96 K-Rock. And we leave you this afternoon with this. He's one of the hosts of the Dead Files on the Travel Channel. It's Steve DeShavi. Steve, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
How does a Marine, a New York homicide detective,
who has had to deal in reality for your entire life,
wind up? How did you get on this show?
You know, it's a long story. I'll keep it short because you got a short time here. But ABC News did a documentary on the NYPD. And it was called NYPD 24/7, and they did seven-part series, which I was the featured detective in the first episode that they filmed the Homicide Squad. They filmed us for like 16 months. So it aired. It was 30 million people viewed it.
Were they like around all the time?
24/7. Like when we'd sleep over in our overnight room, because we'd work these weird hours, and we get called in for a homicide, they'd be knowing what's going on. They'd live right down the block, and they'd come running over and get back out in the car with us.
Right.
So it was 24. So I got used to the camera being around me, obviously. And it aired. It won an Emmy, most watched ABC documentary ever. And the guy that created the Dead Files, Jim Casey, was in with the one of the networks. I think it was Discovery Channel, who happens to own Travel Channel now. They he pitched the show about a private investigator. One of the executives there saw me and said, you should check out and see if this guy wants to be on TV because he'd be really good. So he gives me a phone call, and I think it's a joke. So I hang up. Calls me back, and I'm like, "Hey, J.O., stop the crap.
Get out of here.
Stop." He goes, "Well, I got your number from the chief of detectives, Steve Terizzi gave it." I'm like, Now, I was with Steve on 9/11, so I knew that name wouldn't just pop out of a hat. So I called him back. I said, Steve, did anybody call you from Hollywood to get... Yo, bro, I forgot to tell you. They're going to give you a call. I'm like, that was like 6 months ago. When are you going to tell me? So finally, I called him back. I'm like, yeah, I hear you guys are legit. We did a couple of pilots. They hated me. All the networks said I was... All the networks said I was too New York for them. They were looking for the next Mike Rowe, like the Dirtiest Jobs guy.
Oh, come on. When I hear New York City homicide detective... You fill that role perfectly.
And they said I was too rough around the edges for television. Oh, please.
But that's exactly what you need.
Well, long story short, Travel Channel, Jim comes up with this paranormal show. And I'm like, I'm not doing it. What are you, crazy? I'm not doing a paranormal show. You're out of your mind. I mean, I never didn't believe in a paranormal. I'm a skeptic, but I'm open-minded about
right.
it. Right. And I've used psychics on homicide cases.
Really?
Okay. Oh, yeah, a few times. And, you know, when you need a break on a case, you just do what you got to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was never closed-minded that way. People I don't believe. I didn't say I didn't believe in the right. paranormal. It's the people yeah. I don't believe. So, P.S., fast forward. He calls me about this paranormal show, and I said, all right, I'll give it a shot. I fly out to Denver, meet Amy and about four or five other female psychics that they were trying to audition, basically, for the show. She blew everybody away. I mean, we...
Let me ask you this in the middle of your story here.
Yeah.
Because I watch you guys do this... on telling, I don't know how much production goes into it, how much editing. Did she blow you away? I mean, did it? Was it shocking
well,
for you,
for me,
a skeptic, a guy that's been on the force for a couple of decades, and you see this woman who you haven't met before?
Because I'm sure you've seen your share of con artists.
Right.
So.
Well, this was the deal. We were working on a double homicide from 1971. That the case we were doing for this, they call it the pilot, they call it a scissor, whatever the hell they call it, right? I asked the lieutenant that was in charge of the case back in 1971 that I happened to get to talk to. Now, we redact everything that could
right.
you know, potentially be part of evidence, so you don't want the public knowing about it.
Right.
So it was impossible for her to get this information, and she came up with four different things that only he knew about, and the detective that had the case who had passed away knew about. So I asked him, I said, did you tell this?
Mm-hmm.
Did you tell her anything, and don't BS me, you know? And he says, no, I don't even know who the hell you're talking about, because they kept her separate from him. And she hit stuff that sent chills up the back of my neck. So I was like, well, and then she did it again when we did the first couple of episodes. I was like, all right. I mean, basically, I did the first season to try it out, college tuition for my daughter. I mean, I tell people all the time, I said, life's too short. And everybody that follows me on social media, all they think I do is have fun. Because, you know, I'm either at the cigar bar, or out in my backyard, you know, yeah. I'm at my backyard fishing.
We've crossed paths, and we have so many similar friends, but you were coming down from Northport?
Yeah, so I'm with Uncle John, and with Brian, my two buddies, very close friends of mine. And that's one thing I love about Southwest Florida. You know, I knew a lot of retired guys that right. I worked with. Like, my old partner from Homicide lives 3 miles from me. And never even knew he lived here before I even moved
really?
Down.
Yeah.
I knew he lived in Florida, but who pays attention? You know, guys yeah. are like, you know. So we're up at Northport. He's renewing his security guard license or something. So we take a ride and we try to find a cigar bar and we go up there. So I get the Instagram message from you guys. And I got to be honest, I didn't know about you guys because I don't listen to.
You're going to start now, right?
I am now. I already have. I don't listen to regular radio. I listen to usually what I have on my. Because I play drums. I listen to music that I'm going to probably try to learn how to play and stuff. Or I'm listening to some kind of news, you know, serious news to see what's going on in the world. And, or the laugh stations, like comedy stuff. Because, you know, to me, that's mm-hmm. fun to listen to in the car. So I'm talking, I'm like, Stan and Haney. So my friend Brian's, Stan and Haney, what do they want? I'm like, it looks like they want me to be on their show. You gotta do it! You gotta do it! And Uncle John's in the back, oh yeah, you gotta do it! I'm like, okay.
You gotta wonder what the hell is this.
So now I text back with you guys. I'm like, oh yeah, Thursday's good. And Brian's like, Thursday's no good, I'm working, I wanna go.
Blue skies,
yeah.
Every day's a gift.